Speaking of war and war profiteering, Halliburton is opening a factory, a manufacturing facility, to make the stuff that they sell to oil drilling operations. The factory that they're opening in Mexico.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
They said Halliburton's chose the state of Nuevo León for its economic leadership. That would be a code for cheap labor. Yeah.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. He's the one. Larry Birkhead says DNA tests prove that he's, well, what he said all along.
99.9999999.
That he's the father of Danny Lynn, the daughter born to Anna Nicole Smith last September in the Bahamas. Decision graciously accepted by Smith's last companion and the guy who has had custody of Danny Lynn, Howard K. Stern.
As far as I'm concerned, Larry can come over the house and spend as much time with her as he wants right now. I'd like there to be a gradual transition period for her, so there's no harm caused to her.
All this right after the paternity hearing in the Bahamas wrapped up. Birkhead asked what Anna Nicole would have thought about today.
I think she would be proud that I fought.
The Rutgers women's basketball team is going to have a face-to-face with the man who called them nappy-headed hoes.
We have agreed to have a meeting with Mr. Don Imus. This meeting will be a private meeting at an undisclosed location. In the near future.
That's Junior Essence Carson. She's a team leader. Imus apologizing several times in the wake of calls for his firing. He will start a two-week suspension from his radio talk show on Monday. Stem cell research debate on the Senate floor.
This legislation provides a simple and straightforward way to provide American scientists and researchers with immediate access to the most promising stem cell lines.
That's Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein. This is Republican Senator Sam Brownback.
Yes, we want to help people and treat people who have medical conditions. But we must not trample upon any human to achieve such an end.
The passage appears assured in the Senate, but again faces a certain veto that Congress cannot override. We are learning a little more about the state of mind of fired astronaut Lisa Nowak. A little. CBS's Peter King going through a catalog of evidence.
This new package is mostly an accounting of evidence that was collected from Lisa Nowak at the time of her arrest. Everything from credit cards to nearly $600 in cash. The weapons, of course, the pellet gun, the pepper spray, rubber gloves, the disguise, that sort of thing.
All this stuff she had with her when authorities say she attacked another woman, the object of another astronaut's love interest. Got water? The latest survey of bottled water versus tap comes from the venerable folks at Consumer Reports. Celia Lehrman.
What I think people don't realize is that bottled water is actually not as tightly regulated as tap water. And what's very interesting is that some bottled water is just water that's been filtered, which you could be doing yourself for a lot less money.
They didn't have enough water to put out the fire this afternoon. Tennessee lakeside home of the late country singer Johnny Cash. It's burned to the ground. Barry Gibb, a member of the BJ's, bought that lakefront property in January of 2006. Stocks edging higher today as investors await the start of the first quarter earnings season. The Dow Industrials finishing with a gain of 4.75, eighth advance in a row. This is CBS News.
And now for the bonus round. An apple a day keeps the doctor away. What does a pear prevent?
Hard feelings.
Correct. If you multiply
the square root of 19.
Correct. How many movies has Netflix delivered so far?
I know. Over 1 billion.
Correct.
Yes.
Netflix. Over 1 billion movies delivered so far. Zero late fees. Choose movies online and get DVDs delivered to your door in about one business day. Start your free trial. Plans now from only $4.99 a month. Netflix. It's that easy.
Hello, would you like to be more successful with the opposite sex? I'm Ted Baker, and my program can teach you how to attract a mate. Listen to this.
Ted told me about logging on to freecreditreport.com. I learned that my good credit could help me buy a car and a boat, and now chicks dig me.
My patented system could work for you, too. Log on to freecreditreport.com to get your free credit score and report. A nice condo could make you irresistible.
Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at freecreditreport.com. Get the score.
It could be a breakthrough for those who suffer from diabetes.
A study in the Journal of the American Medical Association provides promise for people with type 1 diabetes. In them, the immune system is like a corrupt police squad mistakenly destroying good cells that produce insulin. In this study, Northwestern researcher Dr. Richard Burke reset the system by re-injecting a patient's own stem cells.
We go in and remove that entire police force and put in a new group. of officers right out of the academy. And they do what they're supposed to do.
Here, 14 of 15 patients achieved at least some insulin independence. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Democrats subpoenaed Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez today for more documents, escalating the fight with the Bush administration over the firing of 8 U.S. attorneys. The subpoena, issued 1 week before Gonzalez is to testify under oath before Congress about the dismissal, seeks hundreds of documents either withheld or heavily blacked out by his department. Subpoena sets a Monday deadline for the Attorney General to produce those documents. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Get the good stuff.
Here's something to think about. Engines with over 75,000 miles on them can burn oil, shortening their life. Castrol GTX High Mileage Motor Oil has added ingredients to condition seals that can help extend the life of your engine. Right now at Napa Auto Parts, you can get Castrol GTX High Mileage Motor Oil for only $2.99 per quart. And check out our great prices on other Castrol motor oils. Price does not include state and local taxes or recycling fees. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
Risk an important presentation by letting just anyone print it. Trust Office Depot for guaranteed on-time, high-quality, professional-looking documents. Our design print and ship depot can print almost anything and ship it almost anywhere. Just bring us your document or go online at officedepot.com and let Office Depot lend you a hand.
Well, Office Depot!
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media.
That's right.
Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
I remember when I lost my mind.
I'm doing better than Don Imus today. And I'm doing better than Howard K. Stern. It was months ago I took myself out of the running for the job as father to Anna Nicole Smith's baby. And I know you've been hanging on the edge of your seats, but Larry Burkhead has been named the daddy. Howard K. Stern, I don't know what they're going to name him. And now let me just spray a little Banaka in here. I don't have any Lysol available. And we will move on to more important issues. Coming up next hour, Attorney Paul Leto joins us. He's an election protection specialist, and he'll explain why he's opposed to the Holt Bill, H.R. 811. It has to do with the continued use of those pesky touchscreen computer-based voting machines.
That's my only advice.
And then we'll talk more about the I-Man and his problems. Peter Hart from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting will join us next hour to talk about the Don Imus flap. And Melanie Sloan from CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, will check in with us and talk about some of the U.S. attorneys who didn't get sacked by Gonzalez and the Bush administration. Exactly what do they do to hold on to their gigs? And California's lieutenant governor will join us in the free speech zone this afternoon. John Garamendi will check in. He serves on an obscure board called the State Lands Commission, and yesterday a 2-to-1 vote set back a plan to build a liquid natural gas terminal off the coast of Ventura. So we'll get his opinions on that a little bit later on. But first, have you heard that there's a group that wants to build a nuclear power plant, a new nuclear power plant in the Golden State of California, right in the Central Valley, right in Fresno? Well, I was surprised to learn about this, a lengthy story in Sunday's San Francisco Chronicle. So we called one of the key people involved, John Hudson. He's CEO of Fresno Nuclear, and he joins us on the program to kick things off today. John, welcome. I'm Peter B.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here, Peter.
Well, it's nice to talk with you. Tell us about your idea to build a new nuclear power plant there in the Central Valley.
Well, yes, that's true. We're a little different than some of the other power companies. We don't think, for instance, that the storage of nuclear waste in permanent facilities and big ponds of water is the thing to do. We have got an agreement with France, providing the government will allow us to ship our spent fuel to France.
Mm-hmm.
We intend on recycling the spent fuel, which some folks called waste. France currently recycles 96% of their spent fuel very successfully. This country recycles none. We do what's called the once-through process.
And and we leave it in ponds at the site of our nuclear power plants, where it is vulnerable to attack. It is an uncertain threat to the nearby communities in terms of just, you know, the radioactive exposure, potential leaks of the water that it's stored in, et cetera. So I appreciate that you're approaching those issues.
Well, I'm not so sure about the threat of attack. That'd be pretty tough to do. Most folks don't realize that nuclear power plants don't explode. I mean, you know, worst-case scenario, meltdown maybe, but that even that's not quite possible in the new designs.
Well, my point is that if you don't store a lot of spent fuel or waste there,
then you don't have a problem.
It's much less vulnerable.
It is. The 4% that they don't recycle is turned into obsidian, the black resin-type rock, and its half-life can get down to about 300 years. So they're doing much better. I think, Peter, the way we've looked at this is if you went into a boardroom with nuclear scientists about 30 years ago when this California moratorium took place, probably the only electronic device you would find in there might have been a coffee pot, and probably people probably still took pictures with cameras that had film in them. And if you went in there with what I suspect is a cell phone you carry with you and said, this thing takes pictures, it talks anywhere in the world, it gets emails and gets on the Internet, they would have probably called you the same thing they called people that were pushing in virtual fertilization back then. They would have said you're some kind of a devil worshiper.
Mm-hmm.
Where today, those are common. Nuclear power still suffers from the fear stigma. There are people are afraid of nuclear power, but in this country, no one's died from nuclear accidents, not one. Whereas people know cigarettes are lethal, that's not arguable. It's not even debatable. And people that know they're going to die from cigarettes spend $40 billion a year on them.
How come
they're not afraid of that instead? Because it's more lethal than nuclear power.
Now, John, would you describe yourself as a recovering devil worshiper?
I come from a very liberal left background. I mean, I was with Cesar Chavez during his last fast. I've always been a Democrat. It's taken me a while to come around to this, but in our valley, we're so much different than you are in San Francisco. We have the highest pockets of poverty in the nation. Brookings Institute out of Washington says the valley is called Appalachia West, while the rest of the state of California enjoys the fact that domestic violence has went down 10% in all of the state. Where we are, it's went up by 60% in the last 10 years. And when asked about that, our Center for Domestic Violence says it's mainly due to lack of opportunities. The economics of what this nuclear power plant will do for our community can't be denied by anybody that tries to think rationally. And the old arguments about safety and those things, I think, need to be reexamined. We're not even heading for global warming yet, but the specifications on the Areva EPR pressure water reactor that we're considering are that you can fly a 747 into the side of it at full speed, fully loaded with gasoline, and it won't crack the concrete of the outer shell. And there's two of those shells. So we felt if we're going to put one of these in, then probably the best breadbasket of the world, the first thing it has to do is be safe. The second thing was, where are we going to get the water for this? And our plan is to use part of the 75 million gallons of gray water that comes from Fresno's wastewater facility.
Agricultural waste?
No.
No?
No, it's human wastewater.
Sewage.
It's sewage, but it's been cleaned up. It's not good for agriculture. We have a heck of a time getting a lot of it into the ground so it can clean up. We mostly spread it out on ponds on about 3,000 acres and hope for evaporation, which it does pretty well with our heat. But all of that water, we could use about 10 million gallons a day to cool a 1,600 megawatt plant. As a matter of fact, the largest plant nuclear facility in the nation's in Arizona, and they pump their gray water 90 miles to do just exactly what we plan on doing.
John Hutson is our guest, Hutson. He's CEO of Fresno Nuclear. And John, in a best case scenario, if everything broke your way, the regulatory process, the environmental impact statements, local issues, how long would it take you to get this power plant online?
2017.
2017.
That's
so
the projected date.
10 years.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
2 years to prepare the cold weather conditional operating license agreement, which costs about $80 million. 2.5 years, about 30 months, for the NRC to review that. And about 4 to 5 years in construction with some type of simultaneous, either remove the moratorium or let us ship this waste to France, this spent fuel to France for recycling.
Mm-hmm.
We have a, what we think, you know, there's three ways you get the moratorium removed. One is through the legislature. The politicians say, let's remove this thing. We've never been a big fan of that one. I mean, every time I talk to a politician, I get tickets to a fundraiser. So I'm not so sure that that's going to work. The other way
is... and junk mail for life.
For life. The second way is you get the CEC, the California Energy Commission, to recommend to the legislature that the moratorium be removed. And they have 100 days to act on it. And if they do nothing, which is frequent, then it's removed. And the third way, of course, is with the referendum process. We think...
Would that be a statewide referendum or a county?
No, statewide.
Statewide. Okay.
Mm-hmm. What we think is people ought to have a right to have a voice on this. I mean, if you look at global warming, if you look at the projected energy demands, 47% more energy by the year 2030, how are you going to meet those demands? Nuclear can't do that by itself. You're going to have probably solar on every house and every business. You're going to have to double or triple your efforts on wind, and you're going to have to add some nuclear power plants. And even then, you might have to have some natural gas fire plants to meet just that demand. If folks know that, if folks want us to not have blackouts, and Fresno City gets its water from about 300 pumps that pump from the aquifer. Without electricity, we have no water.
Mm-hmm.
If people understand all that, I think Californians would have a right to vote on this, and I kind of like the referendum process the most. We're mm-hmm. still in the early parts of this. We've signed a letter of intent with Constellation Energy out of Maryland, the largest energy company in the nation, and if our financial performance go like we think they will, our access to the grid and all of the other things on our site, we intend to apply for that COLA by the end of the year, putting forward this without the moratorium being removed yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a break here. John Hudson is our guest. He's CEO of Fresno Nuclear. And, John, when we come back, I've listened to you, and I want to unload a little bit, and I'll explain what my issues are. And they're very simple. It's cost, it's waste, and it's the regulatory framework in terms of preserving the safe operation of nuclear power plants in this country. So that's what I want to discuss when we return. We open up the phone lines, too, if you'd like to talk with John Hudson about the idea of a nuclear power plant built in Fresno. Could come online as soon as 10 years from now. I'd like to hear your thoughts. Lines are open right now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And you can drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. Let's talk more here on the Peter B. Collins Show. My guest is John Hutson. He's CEO of Fresno Nuclear. One point in his favor, he actually knows how to properly pronounce the word nuclear. And, John, I can't tell you how many intelligent people, military officials who served, in the nuclear navy, can't pronounce a simple three-syllable word. It's nuclear, right?
It is, but I think the President of the United States probably set some standard with pronunciation of things anyway.
Yeah. Well, John, as I told you before the break, I do not believe that I could support your proposal at this time for three key reasons. One is I don't have confidence that you could deliver a functioning nuclear power plant within the cost estimates, even if you're very conservative or very generous, because we've seen over the history of nuclear power facilities being built in this country,
30-year-old history,
that the cost overruns, and I believe that the energy crisis we had here in California at the turn of the century under Gray Davis was largely the delayed result of the cost overruns at Diablo Canyon. And that it threw a financial monkey wrench into the whole system, and PG&E insisted that ratepayers would pay this and not shareholders. And so that's one of my fundamental objections. How can you assure us that you would be able to bring this in on budget and on time?
Well, there's no way you could authentically guarantee that. This is a $3 billion nuclear power plant that we think will probably cost us around $4.7 billion because of some of the things that you said. Even the very first one of these, being Olkiluoto 3, being built in Finland, is about 1 year behind schedule. But in the nuclear building industry, when you're 1 year behind schedule, how do you make that up? Well, the answer to that is you don't. In other construction endeavors, you can find ways to hurry up or work overtime or do things to make it up. But we don't see, even if that happens, as we should do that. I think it affects the quality of the product. We have to remember, we're not making a Timex here, we're making a Seiko. We intend to make the best plant we can. Now, the public, this is not PG&E, this is not a public-owned or public-participating company. The only thing public about this will be that the city participates with the land and the water. In exchange for that, Proposition 218 will come into effect, which says if it's part of the public utilities, you can't charge more for it than it costs you to make. If you make electricity for 1.7 cents a kilowatt at a nuclear power plant, Proposition 218 does not recognize how much it costs you to make the plant. That's what you make it for. That's all you can charge for it. So a percentage of this plant delivered to the public utility system of the city of Fresno will benefit from whatever it costs us to produce that piece of electricity. We're fully aware of the scary parts of this, of being behind, and how much Diablo Canyon ran over. Diablo Canyon now is one of the better-run places, nuclear power plants in the nation.
It's still on an earthquake fault.
It still is, and we're not in Fresno.
That's a plus. I'll give you that.
It is a plus. I mean, Peter B., in those days, I would have probably protested the building of that as well. But this isn't those days. And with us as a private company, even in partnership with Constellation, your cost overrun issue is moot because you don't have to participate in it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's reassuring, because if you're going to do this with private capital and you're never going to come up to us as the ratepayers and hose us down.
I'm not so sure you'll get any of that power in San Francisco. You're going to have to figure out how to meet your energy demands on your own.
All right. Well, I'll worry about that later. Now, the other issue relates to waste. And I did see 60 Minutes, and that was this past Sunday. And I am aware of the French nuclear waste recycling program. The idea that you can put your waste on a rail car or a barge or even JetBlue and send it to France seems very far-fetched to me.
Well, the Japanese have a ship at sea 365 days a year hauling their spent fuel to France. They're currently building a $40 billion facility to create the same thing that France has. When I asked the Riva company, why would you make a deal with me to say you'll take this spent fuel for free? Why would you do that? And they said, Monsieur, do you realize how much money we make off of this? We keep that 96%, and you get your little 4% of obsidian back again. I said, well, in California, we're going to have a heck of a time. Even in Fresno, we have a rail line that goes right to the coast up around Stockton, and we could ship it out to sea. But shipping that stuff seems to be a little bit dangerous to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they took me into a boardroom, and I watched the film that they had where they took one nuclear cask that they put their spent fuel on, filled it full of water, set it on a train track, and they had one of their trains run into it at 65 miles an hour, and it couldn't crack the stainless steel container, and it barely dented it. As a matter of fact, I was shocked. I became convinced by looking at what they did. All of those fears that I had and concerns that I had were answered when I went over there and actually hands-on looked. So,
John,
I think it's feasible.
I want to talk with you a little further. Do you have another 5 or 10 minutes for me?
I do.
Could you? Okay.
Yes.
Because I can't stop this break that's coming up like a freight train with nuclear waste on it. And, well, I don't want to refer to our advertisers that way. I withdraw that comment. In fact, I'll have Don Imus apologize for me.
Oh, don't you? Yeah, thank you.
John, hold on. We'll be right back after the break and talk a little further about this. If you'd like to join in and comment on the plans to build a nuclear power plant in Fresno, here's your opportunity. Toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I'm Todd, the taxi driver, and I'm hacked off again. Seems that every 6 months or so, some celebrity says something extremely stupid, and America gasps in disbelief. Like clockwork, it's happened again. But compared to the Kramer meltdown or the Mel Gibson anti-Semitic rant, Don Imus
doesn't seem worthy of the 3 days of news coverage that it will receive. Now, don't get me wrong. Neither racial hatred or racial intolerance can be tolerated in any shape or form in a civilized society. But I'm so sick of the predictable public display of outrage and tearful mea culpa that takes place every time something like this goes down. So America, get out there and meet your neighbor. Learn about their history, learn about their experience. And when you do that, it'll be really easy to know what's going to hurt your neighbor's feelings. This is Todd the Taxi Driver. See you tomorrow.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from the dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with John Hudson. He's CEO of Fresno Nuclear. They have plans that, if they're approved, will develop and build a new nuclear power plant in California in the Fresno area. And your calls and comments are welcome. We'll go to the phones here in just a moment at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. So, John, as I've ticked off, my objections are cost control. You have addressed that by saying that ratepayers would not be asked to absorb cost overruns of your privately capitalized and built plant in Fresno. That's interesting. Number two, the nuclear waste issue. You want to ship it to France, where they do have a proven recycling program. Why don't we build one of those in the United States? What's holding us back?
The Department of Energy has told us that there are 12 sites they're looking at for that. some states actively are pursuing those spots. One is in South Carolina. I understand that the state of Washington is really interested. We'd certainly like to do that. You know, I've always thought if it was in California, we could have better control of it than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You recycle it. It's a lot safer facility than anything. Even there's no heat there, really, like even in a nuclear power plant. So it's probably the same thing. The country is looking at it. Originally, Peter B., this country said no to recycling because at the end of the recycling phenomenon, you get 8% plutonium,
mm-hmm.
and you can extract that, and this country is always afraid of proliferation. The French successfully mixed that plutonium with uranium-235 and make a fuel called MOX, M-O-X, which is exactly the way to do it. You want to get rid of the plutonium, you burn it in a nuclear power plant. It's very efficient. You can take a golf ball size piece of plutonium, and it would light your Giants baseball stadium for over 200 years, 24 hours a day. So that's the way to do it. I think the economics means you take all these weapons of mass destruction and sell them so we can burn them in nuclear plants and provide electricity. I just don't see it the other way.
Now,
I want to mention your cost overrun, Peter.
But first tell me, have you given up on Yucca Mountain?
No, well, what's the capacity of Yucca Mountain? About 100 million metric tons. There's currently 60 million metric tons of waste in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you did that, I mean, it's going to be full by the time it's finished. I just don't see that as a solution. Let's get past that.
I have never thought Yucca Mountain was a reasonable solution, so I'm
neither do we.
I'm not in deep disagreement with you there. You wanted to address cost overruns again. Go ahead.
Well, when you're talking about the immediate cost of building the thing, that's 4 years of construction with 5,000 construction workers a year. That very much could happen. All those construction workers would be a boon to our economy, but that we understand that degree of difficulty and what the possibilities are. But the financial performance of this shows that if you make 2.07 cents a kilowatt, 2 cents, that's all,
mm-hmm.
not a megawatt, a kilowatt, 2.07 cents, that's $2,300,000 a year profit. Now, if the city participates in that and wants a percentage of that, so be it. I mean, this is not, I mean, with the demand for energy 30 years ago when you were paying all those cost overruns, you weren't paying 16 to 22 cents a megawatt. You weren't getting oil for over $60 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Getting 22% of our oil from the Middle East and paying dollars to a country that hates us is no solution. This group, that was one of the things when we began this thing, saying we've got to do something, and this is exactly what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, the third area is regulation, and again, comparing it with France, the French government has much bigger investment in infrastructure to begin with. You know, their trains actually run on time, and
and they run off nuclear power.
Yes, many of them do. But they also have just a whole stricter regimen of regulation of these nuclear facilities, up to and including the reprocessing plant. And we've been on a deregulatory bent in this country, and it has accelerated under the Bush administration, where they have allowed the coal-fired power plants to put themselves on the honor system. Well, I don't think there's a lot of honor in these for-profit utilities that, you know, if they cut corners, it improves profits. And it enhances the risk and leads to potential for accidents or other unexpected events. And I understand that nuclear power in this country has a pretty clean operating record. Three Mile Island was the closest we've come. We don't have a Chernobyl, but we should never forget Chernobyl, because that is one of the worst-case scenarios that has played out so far from the use of nuclear energy for electrical power. And so when we add all these things up, John, you've got an uphill struggle. And I think you know that. You're a good salesman. You seem to understand the pushbacks that come from the public and people like me. But I think you're going to have to address all of those issues in order to persuade reluctant Californians that it's time to take a new look at nuclear power.
Well, the first issue that you talked about is the honor system. That shouldn't happen in the nuclear business. And of the 103 power plants that are in this nation now, basically every one of them was built custom to that particular spot. That's not the way it should be. They should all be cookie-cutter facilities. They should all be exactly the same.
You mean that would prevent a cooling system from being installed 100% backwards like it was at Diablo Canyon?
Well, the cooling system in the new nuclear, the EPRs, there are four of them, and each one of them can do the exact same thing. The requirements are four redundant safety features on everything. You put up on a belt to hold up your pants and a pair of suspenders to back that up, and then back the suspenders up and back the belt up. All of those things are going to happen, and if you build them all the same, these nuclear plants can, you can have training done once a month as you do now, but anybody can move from one plant to the other, and every switch and everything will be the same. Also in our plant, in our specs say, if you have four different meters that read the exact same thing, so that you won't have any problems with it. If one of them goes down, you have three other ones. But if one goes down, you have 12 hours to fix that meter or the plant's closed. So the things that we've learned from Three Mile Island have been significant in the nuclear business. Chernobyl, the graphite cool reactor with no containment vessel, was basically a plutonium factory that the Russians put into production to make some energy. I mean, that.
Well, and they certainly bungled a response to the emergency that occurred.
Turning off all the systems and running a test, I'm told that some of them got bullets in the back of the head for that. So.
Yeah.
I would have pulled that trigger. That's not going to happen in this country.
All right, John, I want to take some calls, and I just have one final question. Do you watch The Simpsons?
I do not. I've never seen the show.
Okay. Well, that's your homework. Homer Simpson works at a nuclear power plant.
He does.
And you need to see that. Okay?
Thanks.
You don't want your operators high on donuts.
And my police department.
And channeling Homer Simpson. Let's take some calls. Don in Eureka, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with John Hudson.
Hi, Peter B.
Hello.
And hi, John Hudson. Two questions. One, would you explain your 46% increased use of energy? Why are we focused going that rather than conserving so that we don't even have to consider endangering ourselves with nuclear radiation?
Don, nuclear.
Nuclear.
Thank you.
I guess I've heard Bush on your program and others too many times. And secondly, the whole factor of a tremendously dangerous substance from the people who mine it and suffer from that to eventually the buildings decay, and it's a very short life. I mean, it's like, 40 years or so? The buildings can't take it anymore, and then they have to be
decommissioned.
Recycled, so to speak, by burying the waste like they're doing up here now, I guess, with the...
Yeah, you've got the Humboldt plant.
Yeah, so now I guess they're just starting to think about plans to actually start digging and burying it.
All right, let's get some responses. John, go ahead.
First off, the single best thing you can do to address the 47% increase in demand is conservation. But with a 2% and a 3% population explosion in the valley... And Fresno has the high end of that. It's difficult to do just that. The other thing he addressed is the dangerous radiation. Nuclear scientists tell us in our area that you'd have to live next door to this nuclear power plant in the valley for 2,000 years to get as much radiation as you get from one dental x-ray.
Wait a minute, John, because we know over the years that construction at nuclear power facilities, particularly once they start to load the rods, requires jumpers, people who come in and get paid highly for short-term work and who are laid off as soon as they have absorbed too many rads.
Inside the containment vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
And how about the miners, et cetera? And then why the 46% increase? I mean, you're going to have an increase in population, but why can't we be putting solar collectors on roofs for people to use rather than nuclear energy?
Sir, as I said at the start of the show, in order to meet the projected demand, you're going to have to put solar on every single house in the state and every business and
fields and wind power and everything.
By
why
two
not?
Or three times.
It's a lot better. It's not. It's safe, sir.
It is safe. 0.2% of your energy comes from solar. I've never made an argument that it's nuclear versus solar. Nuclear can't do it without the help of solar. You're going to have much more, two, three times, four times more effort from the solar industry, put more solar out there. Then, in order to meet these demands, but it won't work by itself. It doesn't.
Don, let me move to another caller, but
okay,
practice one more time. Nuclear. Oh, he's gone. Bill in Eureka, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
All right, well, I'd like to welcome anybody in the Fresno area who wants to consider these issues to do call us up here in Eureka. We're sitting on top of an old turkey that Bechtel palmed off on us in this quiet corner of California. So we're all awfully well-versed in this topic. I've worked all over the state. I'm a machinist welder. I've worked in the power industry. I've worked very closely with people who have been trained in the nuclear Navy, many of them classified as NROs, very highly classified officers in charge of nuclear vessels.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to work around the civilian nuclear industry. They advise me against it, and they themselves will not go into civilian nuclear facilities.
Because?
They don't feel the safety margins are adequate.
Is this the Homer Simpson factor?
No, I don't think so. Being as I'm professionally making my living as a Homer Simpson in another industry right now,
okay.
I think your operators are probably very focused and highly paid and highly trained. I think the primary thing, as you were talking about before, is you're looking at your cost overruns. You're looking at the cost of operations. You're going to save a little money. I work in the water treatment industry now, very highly regulated and licensed and very carefully supervised because, of course, our errors could also cost lives if
mm-hmm.
they're allowed to occur. Redundancies and safeties are absolutely necessary in any of these industries.
All right, let's get a comment from John about what the caller just described as professionals who don't want to work in nuclear utilities.
Most of the resumes we have and most of the folks that I have met and talked to before this and some of the folks I went to France with to tour the Areva recycling facility come from the Navy's nuclear industry. The CNO, Chief Nuclear Officer of Northwest Energy, is a graduate from Annapolis and got his nuclear experience in the military. The CEO of Constellation Energy was trained in the military. The CNO of PG&E was trained in the military. So many, many, many of the high-level folks that have gotten into this industry.
And what about the line engineers and operators?
Well, they mostly are trained on today's plants. My point with the high level management of these guys coming from the military, I really think it has affected the industry and it's changed so much in the last 30 years that they have taken those same safety standards that they learned while in submarines underwater and applied that to the industry. And those rigid military, you're going to be safer else things, have worked well for the industry. No one has died in this country from nuclear radiation from a nuclear power plant.
Well, not directly.
Because in my training, I've seen photographs of the victims.
Hold on, John. Go ahead, Bill.
That's a broad falsehood, John. In my own training, I've seen the photographs of the victims of nuclear accidents from the nuclear energy industry. Pictures of people with early reactors where rods have fired out of the pile and pinioned them to the ceiling. And, of course, have you ever heard of tickling the dragon? Early nuclear scientists were experimenting with level reactions, and we lost quite a few of them because of overexposure.
Mm-hmm. John, your turn. Go ahead.
Well, the Department of Labor says it is much safer to work in a nuclear power plant than it is in real estate or on Wall Street. And when we contact the Nuclear Energy Institute and others, their facts tell us that not one person ever has died from radiation in this country from a nuclear power accident, not one. 57 died in Chernobyl. 35 of those were firefighters who either died from radiation or from the fire, but not one in this country. Now, if he has evidence of that, I'd certainly like to see it. We spent a lot of time trying to get through Berkeley and through Stanford to find some academia who would be solidly against us doing this in the Valley and show us some reason why we shouldn't from the very beginning. And we've yet to find any solid evidence that any of that's the case.
Well, I side with Bill on this one. I don't have statistics in front of me, John, But from my reading over the years, I think that there have been many people who've developed serious health problems from working in the construction or operation of nuclear power plants. And I do believe that there are accidents like the ones Bill has described. Bill, thank you for your call today. I appreciate that. And, John, I want to thank you for the extra time you've given us to talk about this. I just have one more question, and that is, as I look at your business plan as a capital-intensive effort, if I were in your shoes, I would be looking at an exit strategy of getting this plant licensed and under construction and then flip it to Exelon, which owns 17 nuclear power plants in the country and seems to be intent on buying up as many as possible. Is that in your thinking?
No. I don't know that they would understand our community and what needs to happen here economically to make Fresno on more of a par with other California cities. We're not interested in that at all.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk with us, and we will follow this with great interest.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You bet. That's John Hutson, H-U-T-S-O-N. He's CEO of Fresno Nuclear. We're going to take more calls and talk about a couple other things on the other side of this break. So if you'd like to join me, lines are open right now, 888-5-PETER-B. I'd enjoy your reaction to the comments you just heard, 888-573-8372. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Please join us Monday nights at 10 p.m. for The Week in Politics with your host, Todd Hurlburt and T.C. Wraith. We'll cover presidential politics, see what's going on in Washington, D.C., and take a look at the local issues. And that taxi guy just might show up with an opinion or two. See you Monday at 10.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a bite of ganoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Salt means that our investigation turned up nothing.
If somebody testified lying before a grand jury, doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and to declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women for me.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you've retired, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. Got to catapult the propaganda.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. You just heard a very good salesman, John Hutson, CEO of Fresno Nuclear. Understands what the objections are that people like me have to the idea, the very idea of constructing
a new generation of nuclear power plants in California or anywhere in the United States. And I think he's smooth. He played the jobs card. He played the poverty and crime card. He played the we need more energy card. He played the global warming card. And he says that, you know, ratepayers would never be squeezed to pay for their cost overruns. They're going to send their nuclear waste to be recycled in France. And I think he is a good salesman and he addresses all those concerns. And I have to say my bottom line is I'm unmoved. I don't believe that we have addressed the very serious issue of how to deal with nuclear waste from these power plants. And there is the significant issue about recycling waste and producing plutonium that could be used by bad people for bad things. And yet I recognize that California needs more power. Later today, we're going to talk to Lieutenant Governor Garamendi about why he voted against the LNG plant proposed for off the coast of Ventura. Ultimately, we're going to have to make some tough choices. But I am not prepared to say yes to nuclear power at this time because of the waste issue, because of the cost overruns we've seen in the past, and because I don't have confidence in the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the general federal oversight of the operation of these plants. If that changes, could I be moved? I really don't know. I was floored when Al Gore went before the Senate and the House and was asked about nuclear power in reference to reducing our carbon emissions, greenhouse gases. And he said, I am not reflexively opposed to it. Well, I don't think I'm reflexively opposed to it, but I still am focused on the issues that I've described and can't just put them aside and say, oh, I trust them. You know, we need more Jews. Who cares? If it blows up, I'll be gone. No. Those would be irresponsible positions, and I'm not ready to embrace them. Kaysen joins us. Hello, Kaysen. Where are you calling from?
From Lolita.
Lolita. I'm not familiar with Lolita. Where is that?
It's in Humboldt County, just south of Eureka.
Oh, great. Well, I'm glad you called.
Yeah.
Tell me what's on your mind.
Well, I was hoping to ask your guest about it being an agricultural area there, and water is money down there, where the water was going to come from.
Yeah, he did address that earlier on.
Oh, he did.
He said that they're planning to use gray water from the Fresno sewage treatment plant.
Oh, wow, that doesn't sound like...
And I specifically asked, I said, is this agricultural runoff? And he said, no, this is sewage that has been processed, and so they'll be using, you know, that kind of gray water that isn't...
Where does it go, assuming it's pure afterwards?
Well, you know, he didn't address that.
No, really?
Mm-hmm.
Or the liability if some of that dragon got out of the reactor.
Dragon? What do you mean?
Well, say there was some radioactive leak of some sort and contaminated a wide area.
Right.
Who's going to pay for that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's way beyond any corporation could actually shell out or would.
Well, I think there are a number of risk issues, and he tries to, on the one hand, acknowledge that they're there, and on the other hand, try to sell us around them. And I understand, you know, he's taking a calculated position that the risks are worth taking. And I don't agree with that. At this point, you know, I have not been sufficiently reassured on the cost, on the waste issues, and on the regulatory issues to say, oh, yeah, go ahead. Who cares?
Right, yeah. There's too many questions still. Just because France has been doing it good, it's just nothing has happened yet.
Well, we have all this antipathy toward France. I love France. I love the French. I love to go there. I like the food. I like the wine. I like the women. I'm a Francophile. And if we could import French nuclear workers and sub this out to them, I'd rather give it to them than, say, India or some other offshore location.
You are a Francophile.
All right, Kaysen, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Merci bien. Coming up next, Paul Leto joins us. He's an election protection attorney. He helped in the close election in Washington State, District 50 in Southern California. He'll tell us why he's opposed to the Holt bill next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Join broadcast journalist Glenn Brooks and the Vibrant Living Network every Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. and 11 to 12 p.m. for conversations that invoke creativity, well-being, and compassion. Named as the most knowledgeable voice in the field of holistic health and positive living, Glenn takes your calls and comments right here on KRXA AM 540.
Would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A full court press on Don Imus.
I don't know how anyone could have heard this and not been personally hurt and offended.
DNA proves Larry Burkhead is the father of Anna Nicole Smith's baby.
I told you so.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The Rutgers women's basketball team got to vent today.
I would like to express our team's great hurt, anger, and disgust towards the words of Mr. Don Imus. We are highly angered at his remarks, but deeply saddened with the racial characterization they entail.
That's Essence Carson, team leader of the Lady Knights. Their coach, Vivian Stringer, calls what was said on Imus in the morning deplorable, despicable, abominable, and unconscionable.
This group of young, innocent women are bright, gifted, hardworking, and they have persevered through much.
The team made it all the way to the NCAA Women's Championship Final.
But all of our accomplishments were lost. Our moment was taken away. Our moment to celebrate our success. Our moment to realize how far we had come both on and off the court as young women.
That's sophomore Heather Zurich. Don Imus acknowledges ruining their moment. The team has agreed to meet with him privately and is withholding judgment on whether he should be fired. Imus begins a 2-week suspension from the airwaves next Monday. Now this.
When's the last time you replaced your wiper blades? Get ready in advance. Right now, wiper blades are 25% off.
Never gonna stop the rain by complaining. Because I'm free.
And as always, Advance Auto Parts will install them fast and free. Yeah, free. We're ready in advance.
Sale ends April 28th.
You've got Monday behind you. Tuesday's done, oh no worries. Wednesday's perfect to unwind.
Let's go Outback tonight.
Let go this Wednesday with Outback's new No Worries Wednesday mixed grill. Tender chicken, jumbo shrimp, and your choice of a juicy sirloin or New Zealand lamb chops.
Let's go Outback tonight.
The new No Worries Wednesday mixed grill.
Your weekend 2 days early.
Wednesday, the new Saturday.
Anna Nicole Smith's one-time boyfriend, Larry Burkhead, came out smiling from a court hearing in the Bahamas. DNA tests show that little Danny Lynn, born just months before Smith died of a drug overdose, is his child.
I'm the father, and it's been a long road, and I'm just happy to, you know, have this behind me and just to be able to start a life with my daughter.
Howard K. Stern, whose name appears on the birth certificate, has surrendered.
I'm obviously very disappointed. But my feelings for Danny Lynn have not changed. I am not going to fight Larry Burkhead on custody.
There might still be a custody fight with Smith's mother, Virgie Arthur. The judge set another hearing for Friday. Speaking to the American Legion today, President Bush stepped up the pressure for an Iraq funding bill.
In the coming days, our military leaders will notify Congress that they will be forced to transfer $1.6 billion from other military accounts to cover the shortfall caused by Congress's failure to fund our troops in the field.
Mr. Bush invited congressional leaders to the White House next week, but warned he will not negotiate on a timetable for withdrawal. But Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says it doesn't work that way anymore.
He had a big rubber stamp up here in Capitol Hill. Whatever he wanted, they stamped it okay. That's not the way it is now.
Reid says Congress continues to work on a bill that would have deadlines attached. The House Judiciary Committee wants more Justice Department documents on the firings of those 8 U.S. attorneys. A subpoena was delivered today, just 1 week before Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez is due to testify to the Senate Judiciary Panel. The department says it's already provided an extraordinary amount of information, but will work with Congress. CBS News correspondent John Harchie reports there's an optimistic forecast for gasoline prices.
The government's newest estimate could be good news for drivers. The price will likely peak next month at $2.87 a gallon, up only about 7 cents from where it is now. And during the heavy vacation driving time this summer, Energy Department forecasters actually expect gasoline to drop slightly from that peak to about what it is now, $2.81 a gallon for regular. A big factor in the recent price run-up, as usual, higher crude oil prices.
The price of oil edged up today, but still closed below $62 a barrel. There's a big recall of Ford Escapes. Nearly 445,000 of the small SUVs sold in the United States from 2001 to 2004 have a problem with the anti-lock brake connectors that could cause an engine fire. Ford says it has no reports of accidents or injuries. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
And now for the bonus round. An apple a day keeps the doctor away. What does a pear prevent?
Hard feelings.
Correct. If you multiply
the square root of 19.
Correct. How many movies has Netflix delivered so far?
I know. Over 1 billion.
Correct.
Yes.
Netflix. Over 1 billion movies delivered so far. Zero late fees. Choose movies online and get DVDs delivered to your door in about one business day. Start your free trial. Plans now from only $4.99 a month. Netflix. It's that easy.
Hello, would you like to be more successful with the opposite sex? I'm Ted Baker, and my program can teach you how to attract a mate. Listen to this.
Ted told me about logging on to freecreditreport.com. I learned that my good credit could help me buy a car and a boat, and now chicks dig me.
My patented system could work for you, too. Log on to freecreditreport.com to get your free credit score and report. A nice condo could make you irresistible.
Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at freecreditreport.com. Get the score.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Yes, I'm doing much better today than, say, Don Imus. We'll talk more about the Imus flap coming up in about half an hour. Peter Hart will join us from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, the organization called FAIR. But first, there's a bit of a schism developing in the election protection movement, and it centers around the perfection or lack thereof of the contents of H.R. 811, shorthand known as the Holt Bill, because its sponsor is Rush Holt, a congressman from New Jersey. And if you're a regular listener to this program, you know that Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, who joins us every Friday in our final hour, is respectfully opposed to a bill that he helped craft in the early stages. And there's some significant reasons for it. Joining us now is Paul Leto, who distinguished himself in election protection activities, election integrity activities, first in Washington State in that incredibly close gubernatorial race. And then we met Paul last year around the issues in California's Congressional District 50 in San Diego, where there were significant problems with the election, and Francine Busby conceded. Also, the state Secretary of State, Bruce McPherson, an appointed Republican at the time, permitted a fax to be sent to Washington saying that the election had been won by Brian Bilbray. He was sworn in, and then when Paul Leto and others attempted to raise important legal issues about the legitimacy of that election, the California Superior Court judge had to tell them, sorry, I no longer have jurisdiction because once a member of Congress has been sworn in, you cannot challenge the underlying election. Paul Leto, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, good afternoon.
And thank you for raising these significant issues about the Holt Bill. Talk first of all about the big picture, because I think there's some people who don't understand, people who haven't followed the issues of election shenanigans and election protection, election integrity, the battle that's been underway for several years now. There are many people who don't understand why people like you and Brad Friedman are saying, wait a minute, this bill is not good enough.
Well, I think on the most basic level, the schism, if you will, breaks down between people who take what you might call a voting rights approach to voting rights, and that is that we think about, well, what are the public's rights? What are our rights? What does the public need to know? And what is the public's role in a representative democracy? Versus those people who sort of inherently approach a bill like Holt as a question of incrementally improving technology, and what can we, you know, they say, realistically get from the powers that be and as they are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the reason they would tend to clash so much and the reason that they do clash is that I'm saying, look, if you have a right, that is not something that you compromise with any other force. It is your right, because if rights are not able to trump, you don't have a right. You know, it's just something that gets balanced with all the other things that are put onto the scale, and then they decide what happens. Well, what's happening with people that want to support Holt and other compromised things like that is that they are doing a balancing process of putting, you know, their pebbles on one side and pebbles on the other and figuring out where they're at, and they're completely forgetting about all of our fundamental rights, fundamental voting rights, and even things as basic as the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, how are they forgetting that? Well, the key thing is that all of the amendments, even, that are being considered with Holt would still preserve, at least on optical scanning, secret counting of the votes on the first count. You know, that's the count that creates the headlines, the pundits, and who has to pay for any recount or anything that, if anything, ever happens at all.
So right, any post-election challenge.
Yeah, which there's about a 5% chance or something like that of a post-election thing even getting to the merits. I mean, we're still in the California Court of Appeals on the CA50 thing a year later. We haven't seen a single optical scan ballot from the June 6, 2006 election. So
mm-hmm.
if you're going to put the hopes of your democracy in something that happens after the election, I'm telling you, as somebody who, you know, can make sometimes some money on post-election litigation,
yeah,
that is a bad, bad, bad bet. And yet, that's what Holt is. Holt is, let us keep the first count on both touchscreens and optical scans secret, and in compensation for that, we will give you a 3% audit a couple weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, no deal.
Well, and also, there have been some disputes over terminology. And what we refer to as the paper trail, a toilet paper type roll of documentation that makes a copy of the voter's choices, and then the voter is permitted to verify those, not to remove that piece of paper and take it with them, not to remove it and stuff it into a ballot box after they have reviewed it, but it stays in the machine. And some people think that that is a sufficient backup plan. But as Brad has pointed out on this program on several occasions, we don't have any guarantee that these paper trails will ever be counted.
Right, and not only that, but the studies that have been done to this date suggest that voters catch somewhere between 0%, which is one study, and a nominal percent of the errors on the paper trail because they don't pay attention to that. What they pay attention to is when they plug in the touch screen, and it's just like getting a paper receipt at the grocery store. Only the most, you know, anal person checks that line for line for line. And so people tend to miss errors and frauds in a paper trail even if they check it a little bit. So the real problem is when you institute a paper trail system is that voters only pay attention once, not twice, and then you get the gold standard voter-verified fraud. I mean, it's got to leave these people that want to cheat in elections just laughing and falling off their chairs at the prospect of whatever errors don't get caught on the paper trails are now, you know, subject to this incredibly high level of trust because people think we've got a paper trail.
Mm-hmm. So we now have a situation developing here where the Holt bill next week, when the House reconvenes from its spring recess, is likely to take it up and vote it out of committee. What are the opportunities to amend it, in your view, at this point?
Well, in my view, you know, taking what I call the rights approach, the public has to be able to watch the vote counting, and anything less than that, or that doesn't allow that, is not going to meet democratic minimums and, in fact, creates illegitimate elections. Now, none of us really want to follow that logic because it disturbs us, but I think that it's really inescapable. So until we can observe the vote counting, the public, and make sure it's on the up and up and legit, have a lot of eyeballs on the vote counting, that's really the only way to make it secure. I mean, to exaggerate just a bit, if you have the vote counting in the middle of a high school gymnasium and you have people close and then you pack the stands, it's going to be very hard hard to cheat under those kinds of situations. But the kinds of amendments that are being discussed are, for example, one just to ban touchscreen DREs. That's because they have the worst reputation, and they also have the bad feature of never being able to see your own ballot at any time because it's an electronic ballot.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, optical scans, even though they make people feel good some of the time, what your ballot is whatever the optical scan scans. The ovals you fill in are sort of analogous to your fingers' touches on the screen, and just because you touch something on the touch screen doesn't mean that the right box lights up. And by the same token, just because you fill out an oval on a paper ballot doesn't mean that that's the way the machine actually reads it all the time. But there is that amendment to ban all DREs out there. There's also a lot of concern because the Holt bill, and they're saying this is off the table in terms of negotiation, would centralize power over our elections in the EAC, which is a Bush administration or executive branch that has a very poor record. But
yes, it does. The Election Assistance Commission.
You don't want the president who... Like this one who got in without really winning the election in 2000, then be able to control all the elections underneath him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, there have been some interesting developments. The new Republican governor of Florida, Charlie Crist, Florida, the scene of the crime in 2000, a Republican, has come out and said he wants to completely junk the DREs. We have the state of Maryland, which has taken steps in that direction as well. So why is it that there is so much resistance in Washington? Is it that they don't want to cough up the money, or they don't want to admit that HAVA was a big blunder? That's the Help America Vote Act, by the way.
Yeah, I think nobody wants to admit that they wasted billions of the taxpayers' money and sent us that actually destroyed our infrastructure of democracy, completely rendering elections illegitimate. Everybody that was involved in that is going to resist, as a human being, they would resist admitting that fact. And yet, I'm telling you that if the vote counting is secret and the public can never find out what it is, and that's true, and there's no argument against that, it's not democratically legitimate. It doesn't guarantee us or secure us our number one right of all time, which from the Declaration of Independence is the right to cast off a government that, is not serving we the people, to change it. Now, if you just imagine, if you need to use your imagination, imagine an evil government, in office. No government wants to die on its own, right? With the ability to count those votes in secret, that right, that inalienable right to change our government is not secure. It's not secured, which is the number one job of the government, is to secure us our rights. It is not secured when you've got secret counting, because somebody who's evil is clearly, and it's very easy to do, going to manipulate those counts to keep itself in office.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Attorney Paul Leto. He is sharing with us his objections to the current form of the Holt Bill, H.R. 811. And you've got a website. Is it up yet, Paul? HR811.com?
It'll be up tomorrow. We're still working on it, but I've got the domain name HR811.com, and we'll put the views up there of some other folks besides what I call my rights approach, because it's not really my rights, it's everybody's rights.
Yeah. So check it out. It'll probably be ready tomorrow, HR811.com. And Paul Leto is our guest. We're going to take a break and return. If you have a question or comment, you can call in right now, toll free. It's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And I'm still your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Guest is election integrity attorney Paul Lehto, L-E-H-T-O.
Tuesday in November, I took that stroll to cast my ballot at the local poll. Lines were long, but I didn't care. I had water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. I hit that button, my vote was sent. Now nobody knows exactly where it went. They lost my vote. It isn't fair. I took a stand. Doesn't anybody care? They lost my vote. Now do you know where did my ballot go?
23 minutes after the hour, attorney Paul Lehto with us. And again, the website's going up in the next day or two, hr11.com, where you can read more commentary about these issues. And, Paul, one of the things that seems odd to me is that People for the American Way, a progressive public interest group, and MoveOn.org seem to have settled on the compromises that are in the current version of the Holt bill. And additionally, People for the American Way seems to be pretty avidly in favor of DREs, the touchscreen machines.
Yeah, it is a bit of a mystery. I mean, there are some folks that are very interested in the rights of disabled folks to cast a ballot, and that's a big part of the Help America Vote Act. You know, that can certainly get some appropriate energy from that side, because people that need assistance, should be able to vote with machines if they need that type of assistance. However, the real issue is the non-disabled being forced to vote with assistance, you know, and to have the votes counted secretly. That's the real issue. So PFAW has been active in some disability issues in the past, so I can see maybe that kind of leading them astray a bit.
As Brad has blogged, key representatives of the disability rights movement, particularly those focused on election issues, have said, we don't want to have election problems at our expense. And they're saying, don't keep these machines and use the disabled community as the excuse.
Right. Yeah. And so I was going to say there's no longer excuse for that, because PFAW knows full well what they're doing. So it's really kind of a mystery. But one thing, though, is that PFAW was registered and did lobby for HAVA in the first place. So it's just like in Cuyahoga County, where the people, got convicted for rigging the presidential recount in 2004. People that are involved in something on the first count or the first time around, the original passage of HAVA, are ill-suited to really admit and identify the mistakes that were made. What they want to do is they want to protect it. And so, I think you always have a conflict of interest when somebody's involved on the first time around, when something is founded and then asked to really give a good critique of it. So that may also blind them to the fact that HAVA is a disaster.
Let's take some calls. Dave in Eureka, you're on the air with Paul Leto and Peter B. Collins.
Am I that Dave?
You are that Dave. There's another Dave, too, but you're first.
Well, I'm fighting. I've been fighting this issue a long time, as you well know, Peter.
That's right.
Paul, these machines were designed to cheat, and cheat they do. So to get that reality out front, we listened to the fellow that was contracted to design them. The Republicans have gone to great lengths to put in a corrupt way of running elections, and that's the reality we're facing. I think Russ Holt's an intelligent man. I think he wants to solve the problem. He should be aware, though, most people that are knowledgeable about computers and these little voting machines are just a simple computer.
Yes, they are.
You can get them to do anything. You can program a computer to do anything. It can give you a paper that says one thing and cast the vote another way and count it three times if they want it to. So, and show no record of what has happened.
Well, and specifically, Dave, in these machines, there is the central processor that retains information. There is a drive that collects information. And then there is the printer, the paper trail printer. And it is possible for each of those three systems to record something different.
Yes. We're up against time is not in our favor, and the Republicans want to drag this out as long as possible. I think the answer is probably going to be Ron Wyden and the Oregon method. In the end, we will have paper. They may get counted on a Diebold vote counting machine, but they can be manually recounted, and there will be paper.
All right. Dave, let me jump to the other Dave, and then we'll get a comment from Paul. Dave Berman, welcome to the Peter
yes.
B. Collins Show. Hi.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Paul. My ears always perk up when I hear people talk about the Declaration of Independence. Paul brought it up right before the last break. We have inalienable right to alter or abolish our government when it stops serving our needs. And it sounded like Paul's point was that we can no longer change our government through the process of elections. So I just want to encourage you to talk more about how do we go about organizing to bring about the kind of change that we need if we can't do the ballot box.
Great. And Paul, we got about 45 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, I think we approach that by realizing that, while people can certainly contact Congress, we need to talk to our fellow citizens more than anything else, because this is not a normal political issue. This is the issue of how do we recreate the structures of democracy themselves, because they've been completely destroyed. If we do talk to Congress, though, I think the most effective thing to point up is how can you, when you're voting on your own reelection, possibly think that allowing secret vote counting is good? Is that really the standard that you insist is politically realistic? That's the most we the people can expect when it's always been the people are the master and the government servants are the servants? I mean, I think you need to shine a spotlight on the conflict of interest that every state legislator and federal legislator has when they vote on their own reelection.
Paul Leto, thanks for joining us. Go to HR811.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
The anniversary of the fall of Baghdad. Pushed aside by Don Imus. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Let's see if we have this memorized yet.
That's some rough girls from Rutgers, man. They got tattoos and some hardcore hoes. That's a nappy-headed hoes.
It wasn't the first lapse of taste on talk radio, and certainly not the first insult on Imus' show. There's even a list in the paper. Colin Powell was a sniffling weasel. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson was a fat sissy. New York Knicks were chest-thumping pimps. What's new here, as columnist Eric Deggans pointed out, is that this is the first time Imus has been YouTubed. Yes, YouTube, where bad jokes go not to die, but to become immortal. Michael Richards' N-word rant still gets hits. And yes, you can argue it's unfair for Al Sharpton to beat up on Imus for stuff the black comedians and hip-hop artists are saying all the time, but let's face it, most black artists ignore Reverend Sharpton's appeals to clean up, whereas whites actually feel guilty.
Rand, we ought to have more black guests, and me and the rest of white America ought to understand what's going on in the black community, and I'll make an effort to do that.
Reverend DeForest Soares even said during Easter services, attended by the Rutgers coach, that he wants to stamp out racist and sexist thoughts.
We're going to get him good so that the men who don't have the courage to say it will think twice before they think it.
But here's the other part about the YouTube era. You can't stamp this out. You can't stamp out anything anymore. Reverend Sharpton and Soares want to draw the line right here, but YouTube is all about hits. And when you draw a line, all you do is guarantee that in bedrooms all over America, video wannabes will be looking for a way to cross it. Now this.
Get the good stuff.
Here's something to think about. Engines with over 75,000 miles on them can burn oil, shortening their life. Castrol GTX High Mileage Motor Oil has added ingredients to condition seals that can help extend the life of your engine. Right now at Napa Auto Parts, you can get Castrol GTX High Mileage Motor Oil for only $2.99 per quart. And check out our great prices on other Castrol motor oils. Price does not include state and local taxes or recycling fees. Napa. Get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
This is Dave Ross.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Live from San Francisco, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Lively, informative, compelling, progressive talk radio. And it's interactive, too, which is a fancy way of saying he takes your phone calls. Toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Fasten your seatbelt and let's take a ride in Peter B.'s America.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Y'all turn to that station.
Not that station, it's Don Imus.
World is
was collapsing around our ears. I turned up the radio. I can't hear it. When I got to the house and I called you out, I could tell you had been crying.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. And I'm still having a better day than Don Imus. Joining us to talk about this and some of the more important underlying issues is Peter Hart from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. They're on the web at fairfair.org. Peter, how are you?
I'm also doing better than Don Imus.
Yeah, that's not too tough,
not
is it?
Not too tough.
I have to say that I would not want to screw up so badly that I would have to spend 2 hours in a radio confessional with the Reverend Al Sharpton.
It is a sign of something. And, you know, this is a routine that goes on with people who find themselves in these predicaments. And Imus is, I guess this is at least the second or third time something like this has happened to him, and the difference is that this one seems to be taken a lot more seriously than his previous infractions, which I think, all things being equal, is good.
I understand that. It is a nebulous standard. There really isn't any standard. It's just what popular reaction is. And we were discussing this yesterday because it does often boil down to very subjective issues of taste. And I'm not suggesting that racist comments are simply in poor taste, but so much of what is broadcast today that some people find offensive does revolve around what their personal taste is and, you know, what their own barriers are or boundaries are in terms of what they consider appropriate or inappropriate. And we have a whole industry that is built around exploiting those tensions. I mean, the whole idea of shock jock bad boy radio is to bend the rules, push the limits, and try to impress people with, you know, how notorious you can be on a given day.
To be fair to Imus, I guess, he has to wonder why today or this week he's in trouble for saying things that he's been saying for at least 10 years. I mean, 10 years ago we saw on 60 Minutes he had to admit that he had told someone that he had hired one of his producers to do nigger jokes. This is somebody who has been doing this for a long time, and like a lot of shock jocks or hate radio hosts, they find themselves in a peculiar position of having to defend the things that they said years ago that no one seemed to notice at the time, or very few people noticed. We have known off and on one of the chief Imus watchers in New York City who had been, going on 8 or 9 years ago, faxing some of Imus's comments to guests and to people who appear on the show regularly and said, do you want to associate yourself with someone like this? Would you confront him about his bigotry, about his racism? No one did, save for Clarence Page from the Chicago Tribune.
Tribune, right.
So... You know, and we went through this at Fair with Bob Grant, a New York City radio host, 12 years ago, where people had to make a decision. And I think that's, as you're getting to this question of public taste, it does come down to people are going to listen to these kind of things. They're very profitable. If you are a mucky-muck journalist or a politician or an aspiring politician, is this the game you're willing to play? And for years, the answer's been yes. So now the focus should be on people like Tim Russert and Howard Fineman from Newsweek and Tom Oliphant to say, why do you go on a show like this? I know that Imus cleans it up when you're on, but you know that he doesn't when you're not on the air. So what's the attraction? Do you suffer guilt by association? Those are the questions that should be put to big-time journalism. Let's hear them respond.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I really think that the pressure point is the corporate owners, because they are very conscious of what they're doing, and they make profits based on the notoriety of Don Imus, Opie and Anthony, Howard Stern, you know, name your particular shock jock. And there's a very clear calculation on their part that these kinds of episodes are a cost of doing business. In fact, some of them will snicker privately and say, look at the free media attention that Don Imus has gotten from this. This is huge. We couldn't buy this kind of publicity. We couldn't get this kind of attention if we had actually tried to contrive it. And so there's this kind of uneasy equation here where the corporate broadcasters know that they'll make more money if they push the limits and, you know, generate some controversy. Clearly, you know, it goes over the edge. Opie and Anthony staged that event in St. Patrick's Cathedral where they had a contest encouraging listeners to engage in public sex acts in this Catholic church. And when you drill down beyond it, it wasn't just Opie and Anthony with a wild idea. This was something that was clearly approved at the upper levels of management of that radio station, if not Mel Karmazin, who was running the whole company at that time. The shock jock event at St. Patrick's Cathedral was sponsored by a beer advertiser. So this was not an accidental, you know, one-off thing. Oh, we went a little too far. They were intending to go that far. Their only disappointment was that they got caught and fined for it.
Yeah, and when you hear NBC or CBS, or in the case of Michael Savage, MSNBC, say that they're very concerned about what was said on the air by Savage or Imus or anyone like them, they were hired to say those things. It's absurd, and I think it offends our intelligence to say that MSNBC wasn't sure what Michael Savage was going to say when they gave him a TV show. They gave him a TV show because of the things he said on the radio. And then when he came on to the television show and said those things, they professed to be shocked that he would do this. Mm-hmm. It is this game, as you're getting at, and it's a very profitable game for them. When things go horribly awry, as they are with this Imus meltdown, then they have to trot out their apologies and their pledges to do better, just as Imus has every time. Nothing's ever changed about his show, but he has expressed contrition or remorse or what have you several times now, and he is in the process of doing it again. And in a year, when something else happens on the show, and he'll do the same routine, and this goes on and on. If it weren't so profitable, if there weren't an audience for it, it'd be off the air in a second, and we'd have a very different kind of broadcasting, I suppose.
We're talking with Peter Hart from Fair, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. If you have a comment you'd like to join us, bring it on now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Peter, in March, I went to what's called the Radio and Records Talk Radio Seminar. This is a conference of all the leading programmers and hosts and management people related to talk radio. There was one panel that featured two attorneys, one who had represented Bob Grant when he got fired from WABC for his pattern of racist comments, and the other was the attorney for Opie and Anthony. And as I just referenced, they got bounced from the CBS-owned radio station in New York for this concocted sex act in St. Patrick's Cathedral. What was really interesting is that neither of these attorneys could offer any kind of a value judgment about the tastelessness of their clients' respective broadcasts. And they talked in very narrow terms about protecting the talent from discipline or firing by management. And I raised a question in this session that nobody really wanted to address, and that is, how does the performer deal with this when management keeps encouraging them to, give me more hose? There was an incident in Los Angeles a few years ago where Mark and Brian, a wacky morning team on a white rock station, gave away black hose. These were garden implements that were colored black. And they thought that was really funny. And, what they are trying to do is generate that notoriety because the Arbitron rating system benefits people who listeners can identify. It's a name recognition thing much more than writing down, exactly how many minutes I listened to the Peter B. Collins Show or Rush Limbaugh or whoever. So the broadcasters know what they are doing. and they encourage the performers to go to the line, cross it as often as they can without explicitly getting caught or drawing too much attention to the infraction itself.
Yeah, and Mark and Brian are a perfect example in that they've had several incidents like this, and management at some of the stations has either encouraged it or the similar kind of rhetoric has gone on behind the scenes. We know a lot of the Clear Channel stations operated that way, and certainly on upper management. It is kind of a culture that encourages this on the air and sometimes off the air. The FCC regulations on decency are vaguely written. That's a good thing. But they do include language about comments or programming that offends the common decency of the community in which it airs. So you do have some leeway to at least raise the question that, is this proper talk for our community? And I think one of the lessons of this IMUS situation right now is that people overwhelmingly, of course, reject this. Not so much in the pundit class on television, unfortunately. I think what you've seen in the last couple of days is a parade of white men who enjoy going on the IMUS show, who find ridiculous contortions that they can make in order to justify what a good guy he is off the air. You have to understand the charity work that he does.
Mm-hmm.
Consider the whole man.
Right.
These things that don't matter to the listeners who have to deal with the kind of nasty rhetoric that flows from his mouth.
Well,
but you've seen, you know, a conga line of Lou Dobbs and Howard Fineman and Tom Oliphant, all these people who make their living on TV and certainly love being on the IMUS show, saying, you really got to know the guy's heart. He's a good guy.
We played Fineman's remarks on the program yesterday, and he was basically coming up with a kind of smokescreen that was racist in its own.
Yes, yes.
Right, saying, you know, Don, times have changed. You can't do the stuff that you did 10 years ago. Well, wait a minute, Howard.
there was a time for that 8-9 years ago, and now, you know, it's not that time.
Yeah, when Bubba was in
the world he lives in.
When Bubba was in the White House, he was giving out passes on this kind of stuff.
Apparently.
Well, here's a remarkable disclosure from Gwen Ifill. She is now an anchor at the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer on PBS, and she is, for the record, African American. And she served for a time as NBC's Capitol Hill correspondent and was, I guess, at the White House for a while. And at one point, she was invited on the IMUS show, and she didn't know who he was, had never heard it, and so she didn't accept the invitation. And then a friend of hers told her that Don IMUS was saying nasty things about her. Quoted in the column, "Isn't the Times wonderful?" Don IMUS is quoted as saying on the radio, "It lets the cleaning lady cover the White House." Now, I'd never heard that before, but that is inexcusable. That's not something that is, you know, simply intended to shock. It is racist at its very core.
Yeah, and, you know, the column that Gwen Ifill wrote today in the Times, I thought was thoughtful up to a point in that she dealt with the idea that this is the kind of toxic stuff that's on the airwaves, and you have to wonder about my journalistic colleagues who go on this show and, in a sense, give it a kind of permission or a tacit blessing.
Imprimatur, yeah.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing, and, you know, maybe it's understandable that she didn't speak out at the time. You know, you are a White House correspondent. It's a very prestigious job. But, you know, if you're at NBC and you're publicly criticizing a host that they consider very valuable to their brand, you know, management might not like that.
Yeah.
But you wish that people would speak out. You know, and she makes a point of saying she didn't respond to it publicly. Well, what if she would have at the time? Maybe none of this with the Rutgers women's basketball team would have happened, because he would have learned a serious lesson. IMUS, for the record, I suppose, says that he doesn't remember saying that, which, you know, he's been confronted with this quote several times over the years and has never challenged it, but now lately he's not sure that he ever said such a thing.
All right, Peter, we got to run to a break. We'll
continue
in just a moment with Peter Hart from FAIR. We'll take your calls, too, at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372.
The First Amendment thing's been carried too far. I personally do not believe that the First Amendment gives anybody the right to spew filth over the airwaves.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Ropp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
And a very pleasant good afternoon. Let's take a look at the latest and give you a little bit of an update here. Well, it looks like we have a problem in Portola Valley, Alpine Road at Piers Lane. Yeah, CHP on the way to the scene there. No further, further information on that situation. What about Highway 17? No major stalls or accidents to really tell you about at this point. We are going to tell you about Santa Cruz, though. Southbound 1 after Morrissey Boulevard. It is a three-vehicle crash, and it has been cleared to the right shoulder CHP, in fact, on scene. SoCal, northbound 1 at Porter Street. We have a fender bender there. It's off to the right-hand shoulder, and CHP is there. Other than that, we are looking pretty good in the Monterey and Santa Cruz and Salinas areas. This support brought to you by Great America. Great America is open daily for spring break. Adults have $13 with a coupon from participating Carl's Jr. A family of four saves up to $52 at Great America. That's traffic on KRXA.
You got the Peter B. Collins Show, 51 minutes after the hour.
What? On your mark, ready, set, let's go. Dance floor pro, I know, you know. I go psycho when my new joint hit. Just can't sit, gotta get jiggy with it. That's it, now honey, honey, come ride. DKNY, all up in my eyes. You got a Prada bag with a lot of stuff in it. Give it to your friend, let's spin. Everybody looking at me, glancing at
the
kid.
Well, the dividing line between humor and racism can be very hard to define. And there are a lot of examples, you know, white men can't jump. You've got white rappers, some whom can pull it off, and others who just seem really stupid. And then you have Don Imus, who appears to, you know, he's an older guy. He's been doing the shock jock thing for a long time. And he's trying to be hip and happening, and he knows there's a hip-hop nation out there, but he doesn't really speak the language. And if Don asked me, I would advise him to avoid trying that stuff, because he's just not in touch with it, doesn't have the chemistry. But Peter Hart, we got a call from Pete from Eureka, whose cell dropped, and he said, why is no one pointing out that rap stars use these words all the time? And it is an interesting point, because this these terms have entered the lexicon from rap music and from the black community. And many times you and I might be offended by African-Americans who use the N-word to talk to one another. But that is very different from white guys sitting around and trying to use some of the same slang and language.
I think there's a difference, and I also think that there's no absence of a discussion about those issues in hip-hop or anywhere else in the culture. There's always been a lively discussion, and, you know, Al Sharpton was pointing this out when confronted with that. He's actually part of that discussion to talk to people through Russell Simmons' group or through other hip-hop contacts to foster that kind of dialogue about what the appropriate language and modes of expression are. And what you hear from a lot of people in the hip-hop industry is that radio, in particular the big record companies, encourage that kind of artistry, if that's how you want to put it. You know, and it's not the way hip-hop has always expressed itself, but if you're looking to sign with a major label and that major label wants to market a certain image that will be popular with the handful of radio conglomerates, well, they know an easy way to do it, and it's to engage in this kind of stuff and roll the dice and hope that that works. So, you know, I think that discussion's going on. I think it's very helpful and valuable, and I think it can't be separated from what you were pointing out a few minutes ago about the corporate ownership, the corporate structure of radio and of the music business.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's selling this. Someone's making money off it. Why do they get a free pass from people? That's a better question, I think.
Well, I have a friend who went bankrupt in the gangster rap business. He's a white Jewish guy. And he owned the record label that produced the memorable song called Bitches on My Ding Dong. And I talked to Jason about that a couple of times. By the way, not the same Jason you hear on this radio show occasionally.
Make that clear.
Yeah, and he was saying, look, I don't tell them what to say. They say this stuff, and I exploit it. And he was honest that he was exploiting it, and he didn't really have a conscience about what the impact was either on the black community or on the broader national community.
Yeah, and when you've been pointing out that there are some issues of taste and where the line is, and that's always been a fascinating conversation people have had about cultural issues, and I think Dave Chappelle's show was a great popular example of someone that was pushing the limits of what people thought were permissible things to say about race, and much of that show was race humor,
yeah.
And I think it engendered a lot of hostility and also a lot of thoughtful discussion about what words are and aren't acceptable and what lies behind code word racism, which mm-hmm. I think is something that's a lot more common in polite society than this kind of outright form of bigotry that Don Imus might represent.
Yeah, but
it's a fascinating discussion, but I think it happens a lot more often than we think.
Yeah. Brian in Manchester, New Hampshire, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Yeah, this is the whole topic here, alleged topic. It's I would say that the whole thing becomes Imus shouldn't have said what he said, but these are childish wiseacre remarks by Imus and his staff there, that Bernard guy, and but every day the rightist and the corporatist, they're right out of the Sinclair Lewis's book, It Can't Happen Here, that the American corporate state and the rightist patriotic party, the Rush Limbaughs of the world, and that Michael Savages, they say things like, you know, Limbaugh says, Roosevelt is dead, but we're doing something about any of his policies that are left. We're destroying them. I paraphrase, but it goes on from there. The hateful things they say about working class average people every day, the lies they make about the economic situation in this country, the tax structure in this country coming up on April 15th and 17th. Now, the right-wing media is the real danger, and Reverend Sharpton doesn't seem to want to admit to that. He doesn't want to fight the real power. And, you know, the Ken Blackwell's Ken anti-Blackwell. Mm-hmm. I don't feel ashamed a bit to saying that about that so-called Secretary of State of Ohio, that criminal who stole the Ohio 2004 election. He's always going to remain a criminal to me, what he did there. He stole democracy from our nation and from the people of Ohio. And the right is right and wrong is wrong, and there's some things that are just horribly unfair, and this media is horribly unfair towards the working class, towards the average people of all races. They're right now they're scapegoating immigrants at a massive scale. And
Brian, let me stop you there. We're just tight for time here. Peter, I do take his point that there are many standards, not just a double standard, and that it can be very difficult for people to figure out exactly how to navigate.
I think that's true, you know, and I wouldn't disagree with a lot of his assessments of what's wrong with the media. And there is something to consider where something like this Imus
controversy becomes a top-shelf media issue when we ignore some of these more fundamental problems.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of hate being spewed, not just about some basketball players.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Peter.
My pleasure.
Peter Hart from FAIR. Visit their website, FAIR.org. I'm Peter B. Collins.
We're going.
Tom Hartman.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of war and war profiteering, Halliburton is opening a factory, a manufacturing facility, to make the stuff that they sell to oil drilling operations. The factory that they're opening in Mexico.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
They said Halliburton's chose the state of Nuevo León for its economic leadership. That would be a code for cheap labor. Yeah.
Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. If he thinks Al Sharpton was tough, wait till Don Imus meets the Rutgers women's basketball team. The players have agreed to meet the radio host in private to hear his apology, but today they went public with their anger. WCBS Radio's Marla Diamond was there.
Her team should have been celebrating their trip to the NCAA women's final. Instead, says Rutgers coach Vivian Stringer,
we had to experience racist and sexist remarks that are deplorable, despicable, and abominable.
Team center Kia Vaughn says she's deeply hurt and is looking forward to meeting with Don Imus.
And ask him, after you've met me as a person, do you feel in this category that I'm still a whole as a woman and as a black African-American woman at that?
Marla Diamond, CBS News, Piscataway, New Jersey.
Imus begins a two-week suspension next Monday. He says it's appropriate and he'll try to serve it with some dignity. Larry Birkhead won his battle today. The former boyfriend of Anna Nicole Smith learned the DNA test prove he's the father of Smith's baby girl. He met reporters outside court in the Bahamas.
There's certain things that I can't talk about, but this is one that I'm happy to talk about. And my baby's going to be coming home pretty soon. So.
Howard K. Stern, Smith's most recent companion, has given up his paternity claim and says he'll cooperate with Birkhead. CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein reports the Senate is headed for a new showdown with President Bush over federal funding for research using embryonic stem cells.
Massachusetts Democrat Ted Kennedy said the bill creates a system for leftover embryos to be used for stem cell research.
Science without ethics is like a ship without a rudder. For that reason, the legislation establishes essential ethical safeguards.
But Kansas Republican Sam Brownback said viable embryos would be put to death.
The ethics of S5 have nothing to do with protecting innocent life from destruction. They will fund, with taxpayer dollars, the destruction of innocent human life.
Supporters say the embryos would otherwise be thrown away. Howard Arenstein, CBS News, Washington.
The White House says President Bush would veto the measure. The first space shuttle mission of the year is delayed till June 8th at the earliest. Atlantis is supposed to go to the International Space Station, but as CBS News correspondent Peter King reports, it needs extensive repairs.
Atlantis was scheduled to fly last month, but a February hailstorm damaged its fuel tank. Foam insulation repairs have taken longer than expected. NASA's fuel tank manager says there are still 2,664 dents and dings to fix before it flies. He also says the repairs are going well, and tests are showing that the tank shouldn't shed dangerous foam insulation after liftoff.
San Francisco slugger Barry Bonds is closing on Hank Aaron's career home run record, but Aaron has no plans to be there if and when Bonds breaks it. He told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution he'll probably fly to West Palm Beach to play golf. On Wall Street today, the Dow gained 4, the Nasdaq gained 8. This is CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and 2 nights in Las Vegas? And what about, you don't pay a dime for it? That's right, act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas' newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge, stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you You know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 866-40-GO-NOW. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 866-40-GO-NOW for all the exciting details. That's 866-40-GO-NOW. Call now.
At the Mexican border in southern Arizona, an unusual find.
This was not a narcotics or an immigration or a contraband issue. It was an issue of several million dollars worth of stolen wedding dresses.
Brian Levin of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Service says it's the truckload of donated dresses that was hijacked last November on its way to a charity in Los Angeles. They contacted Fran Hansen of Making Memories Breast Cancer Foundation.
We were able to arrange to have the dresses and the trailer turned over to Ms. Hansen today, this afternoon, at the Nogales Port of Entry.
Hansen says she'd been praying for this moment for the past several months. The dresses will be sold, the proceeds used to grant the wishes of women with terminal breast cancer. Health officials in Georgia are trying to track down a missing computer disk with the names, birth dates, and Social Security numbers of 2.9 million Medicaid and children's health care recipients that was lost during shipment. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
When's the last time you replaced your wiper blades? Get ready in advance. Right now, wiper blades are 25% off.
Never gonna stop the rain by complaining. Because I'm free.
And as always, Advance Auto Parts will install them fast and free. Yeah, free. We're ready in advance.
Sale ends April 28th.
You've got Monday behind you. Tuesday's done, oh no worries. Wednesday's perfect to unwind. Let's go out back tonight.
Let go this Wednesday with Outback's new No Worries Wednesday mixed grill. Tender chicken, jumbo shrimp, and your choice of a juicy sirloin or New Zealand lamb chop.
Let's go out back tonight.
The new No Worries Wednesday mixed
Start
grill.
Start your weekend 2 days early.
Wednesday, the new Saturday.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We're heading into the free speech zone today on the Peter B. Collins Show. Your calls and comments are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. And a little later this hour, California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi will join us. He cast a vote blocking development of a liquid natural gas platform that was proposed to be built off the coast of California near Ventura. We'll find out why later this hour. But first, it's time to get an update on corruption in Washington from Melanie Sloan at CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. How you doing, Melanie?
Good, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing better than Don Imus and Alberto Gonzalez combined.
Well, I don't think that would be too hard right now.
I'm just kind of wondering what Alberto is doing these days. He was rebuffed. He wanted to come to the Senate this week to present his budget for the Justice Department. And they said, no, we ought to talk about your long-term commitment to the gig before we get to that. So he has this week to learn how to spend more time with his family and perhaps to rehearse some lines to tell the Senate next week.
Right. I think he should just start spending all that more time with his family right now.
Yeah. And not practice.
Just spend the time with the family.
Get right into it. Well, we have a development today that John Conyers, the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, has subpoenaed new documents from Gonzalez. What's he looking for there?
He is is looking for a large number of documents, documents that Charles Schumer over in the Senate Judiciary Committee is also looking for, but hasn't yet actually taken the step of subpoenaing. But these are documents that discuss all of the U.S. attorneys, the rating system for the U.S. attorneys, how they decided which ones to fire and which ones to keep. Apparently, they had ranked them all.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's going to be an interesting development. One of the things that many of us have been thinking about was that maybe this whole effort to review the U.S. attorneys was a smokescreen to dump Patrick Fitzgerald and prevent him from pursuing the Scooter Libby case, which ultimately could have involved Karl Rove, but so far has not. And according to the Associated Press, there's this unredacted list ranking the performance and standing of each of the U.S. attorneys, and they've previously confirmed that Fitzgerald was listed as not distinguished on one of those lists.
Which is particularly ironic because Patrick Fitzgerald has long been considered one of the leading prosecutors in the nation. You know, years ago when he was first appointed to handle the Scooter Libby matter, I had people calling me saying, you know, you should come out against this. He's a Bush administration appointee. He won't be any good. And I'm a former prosecutor, and I talked to a lot of prosecutors I knew. And everybody across the board said that Patrick Fitzgerald was a straight shooter and an excellent prosecutor and would do a good job if he was just allowed to do his job.
Mm-hmm. Well, and people have looked at the situation. We know that eight were fired, and people have raised serious concerns of at least seven of those cases where there could have been interference for political reasons, sacking these individuals so that they couldn't pursue cases, or it appears in the case of David Iglesias, sacking him for not doing the bidding of Senator Domenici and Congresswoman Wilson. But the other side of that coin is the people who still have their jobs as U.S. attorneys, who we can presume played ball and perhaps went to, you know, extra lengths to please the White House and the Gonzales Justice Department.
There no doubt are many of those, and we just don't know exactly who they are. One interesting thing I want to point out on David Iglesias before we move to the current U.S. attorneys is that, you know, it turns out that in part they were claiming they were firing him because of all of the commitments he had as a Navy military reservist. They said he was out of the office too much. Well, first, that's illegal. You can't fire someone because of their military service. But secondly, there's a long list of U.S. attorneys, six of them, in fact, who have been posted with jobs in Washington at the main justice, and their offices are in somewhat of a disarray because they've been gone for so long. In fact, in Montana, a federal judge has been heavily critical of the Montana U.S. Attorney's office because the U.S. attorney there has been in Washington for 2 years now.
Well, that's just amazing. And the other development, I wanted to let you finish your point, and then we'll talk about Minnesota, because the developments there on Friday are quite remarkable. But what other speculation do we have about U.S. attorneys who held on to their jobs and what they did in order to stay?
Well, one, for example, for whom there are a lot of questions about now is a Wisconsin U.S. attorney, Steve Biskupic. In an extraordinary circumstance last week, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which is not known in any way for being a liberal court, overturned the conviction of a state employee who'd been charged with
corruption.
I'm sorry, he'd been charged with illegal conduct in regard to a travel scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And Republicans had made a lot of hay of this scandal during the last election. It involved the Democratic governor of Wisconsin. Well, in this extraordinary step, right after the oral argument in the case, which was up on appeal, the court released her from custody. And this literally never happens.
Well, and it's kind of surprising because her name is Georgia Thompson, and I don't know about you, Melanie, but I only learned about this from yesterday's lead editorial in the New York Times. I have yet to see a news story about her conviction and the reversal of that conviction.
I did see a story on Friday from a Wisconsin paper,
mm-hmm.
The Wisconsin State Journal. So So not exactly a leading paper in the nation. I mean, I'm sure it's very good in Wisconsin. But it was a very big deal. And one of the judges on that panel is, in fact, a man named Frank Easterbrook, who's a Reagan appointee, known to be a particularly right-wing judge. There's also a Ford appointee on that panel. There was one Clinton appointee. But it was a unanimous panel that released this woman.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what did Steve Biskupic, I mean, was he selling his soul in order to get this terrible conviction against this poor state employee who clearly didn't deserve it? And I think questions are going to be asked about that. And the New York Times, as you said, did an editorial saying that this is one of the cases that ought to be investigated by the House and Senate Judiciary Committees.
Yeah. Now to Minnesota, where in Minneapolis, the Bush administration recently installed a woman named Rachel Paulose, P-A-U-L-O-S-E. She's 34 years old, scant management experience, and in a move that I think is unprecedented, her top three deputies demoted themselves on Friday. They bumped themselves down to staff attorney positions in protest of some of her moves.
That's right. All three of these people refused to work with her another day. They've been silent about their reasons, but it is clear that she is not running that office well. She stepped in when a longtime career prosecutor stepped down, and it's my understanding that she's a very good friend of Monica Goodling.
Mm-hmm.
Monica Goodling being the person who was, in fact, in charge, another 33-year-old, who was in charge of all of the U.S. attorneys and resigned after she pled the Fifth Amendment and refused to testify before the House and Senate.
Right. And speaking of Monica Goodling, we're learning more about her. She got her law degree at Regent University School of Law, and that's over in Virginia Beach or the Roanoke area. And that is founded by Pat Robertson. And it turns out, I haven't been able to follow this up and identify the individuals, but news accounts say that as many as 150 of these evangelical attorneys have been hired into the Bush administration, and that Ashcroft and Gonzalez, the two attorneys general, waived some of the standards to permit these people to be hired.
Oh, well, that is not in any way surprising. Something that I have been hearing for many years has been the over-politicization of the Department of Justice and how they have not been hiring the kind of top-quality people that they did in the past from top law schools. And when going to the Department of Justice, the Justice Department can get its pick of lawyers. It used to be a really prestigious place to work.
Mm-hmm.
But now they have so politicized the place that you can't get it for a long time. It helped you hugely if you were an evangelical Christian in order to get a job. And you have to remember, of course, that Alberto Gonzalez, the attorney general, the former attorney general, John Ashcroft, used to hold daily prayers sessions in his office,
right.
And the deputy attorney general, Paul McNulty, also involved in daily prayer sessions. So, of course, people who are evangelical Christians are likely to be much more comfortable with that in any event.
Well, and I think there's another opportunity to draw attention to a guy named Jay Sekulow, who is an attorney. He's on the Robertson payroll, and he's based at Regent University. He runs a nonprofit called the American Center for Law and Justice, and they do a lot of political activity from that nonprofit, in my opinion. I'm on their email list, and he keeps me apprised of the various efforts that they undertake, and it appears to me that they regularly cross the line there of engaging in partisan political activity.
Well, that's good for me to know, and I'll take a look at that, Peter.
Yeah, take a look at that guy, Jay Sekulow. He's quite an operator, and he's got a radio show that's on Christian stations around the country and has quite an impact that most people have no idea about. It's powerful, sometimes insidious. Well, Melanie, thanks for your work. We'll check in with you next week when Alberto Gonzalez has some important appointments to keep on Capitol Hill.
That's right. Okay, thanks, Peter.
Thank you. That's Melanie Sloan at CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Now, let's go to the free speech zone. Your calls and comments are welcome. You know the rules. Any subject, any viewpoint, from anywhere in the sound of my voice. You want to talk about nuclear power, a new plant in Fresno? Talk about corruption in Washington or anything in between? I welcome your calls. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, toll free. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos.
One of the biggest benefits for us are the relationships that we establish with our customers. Our customers have said that they love coming to our place because we have great stuff and great prices.
The thing that makes us unique is the mix of things. It's a very eclectic mix. We've become a destination for a lot of people. They'll bring friends out. They'll do little mini tour buses and bring friends. So we really, really appreciate that. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1, heading towards Watsonville. We have everything from French soaps to linens to wall hangings.
And it's gotten to the point where people think of us when they need a gift. It's not just a utilitarian purchase or frivolous, but they make us a regular stop when they need a gift.
We're open from 10 to 5, Wednesday through Sunday. Come by, have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Well, we're going to give you some valuable knowledge out on the roadways right now. And what am I talking about? Well, not talking about a lot. It's a Tuesday. It's pretty slow. I do have one problem to report. It's in Aptos. It's Trout Gulch Road at Soquel Drive. It's a two-car crash. Actually, it looks like they've moved the cars off of the roadway and into a nearby parking lot. So this is really not affecting any traffic at all. Meanwhile, we've got our typical Bay Area construction. Santa Cruz, northbound 1, the on-ramp to Emma Line, the off-ramp closed 24 hours a day for road work, scheduled through the 31st of December of this year. Southbound 1, the ramp to, that would be the on-ramp to Morrissey Boulevard. The on- and off-ramps are closed 24 hours a day for road work through May 1st. This report brought to you by Office Depot. Don't run the risk of running out of ink and slowing down your business. Hurry into Office Depot today.
The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. It's the free speech zone. Your calls and comments are welcome. And we still got some more DVDs for first-time callers to the Peter B. Collins Show. The DVD is the documentary called Out of Balance that we talked about on the program yesterday about ExxonMobil's impact on the climate change discussion. 888-5-PETER-B. Lines open for you here. Toll-free 888-573-8372. There's lots to talk about. And sometime later this hour, we'll get a call from John Garamendi. He is the Lieutenant Governor of California. And as we mentioned, he voted to delay or deny a permit for a liquid natural gas plant or a depot that was proposed for a site off the coast of California near Ventura.
And we'll also ask him to comment on the plans for a nuclear power plant in Fresno that we heard discussed in a first hour of the Peter B. Collins Show today. To your calls now at 888-5-PETER-B. And we've got Tim in Eureka. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter B. I haven't called in for a number of months. I wish I had time to talk about all the cool things you've said that I've heard, and thank you for the work that I haven't heard.
Okay, we'll pick two.
But listen, when Don Imus comes back from his 2 weeks of re-education,
yeah,
maybe he could rename his show Anus in the Morning. or Famous Anus.
Famous Anus.
did you know that you noticed that Andrew Sullivan and John Edwards now have something in common?
No, what?
Yeah, they've both been called faggot by Ann Coulter.
Oh, and one of them was proud.
Yeah, right. And I had another comment too. Oh yeah, America used to have an embarrassment of riches,
mm-hmm.
and now we have a richness of embarrassment under the Bush-Cheney administration.
That's for sure.
They're just driving. I guess they're driving everybody crazy. They're driving me crazy, and some have said it's a short drive. But if I could, in a minute, I wanted to put a word in for Congressman Mike Thompson.
All right.
I heard at least one of his few minutes on your show,
mm-hmm.
and I'm glad you put his feet to the fire a little bit, and certainly everybody has a right to put whatever fire they want to any public official's feet that they, you know, that's their right.
Yeah.
But I think what happens, and I have a little bit of a bone with some of, and I've been on peace demonstrations in near Eureka with some of the very people like Mr. Ensimer and Ellen Taylor who have been really tough on Mike. But I think the point has to be remembered is that Thompson is, as you've said, a blue dog Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of a liaison with the nut jobs on the Republican conservative side. And he voted against the war.
He did.
And I admire the people for their anti-war sentiments. I've marched with them, but I think the point has to be made that it would be nice if people in, say, Duncan Hunter's district could start hassling his district offices,
mm-hmm.
and the district offices of everybody else who has voted and supported the Bush-Cheney debacle. It would just be a little, you know, just, I think, do us a lot of more good. And also,
you want to go after the real Neanderthals?
Absolutely. I mean, sure. Keep the pressure on Mike Thompson if they feel the need to, which I do too.
Well, let me offer.
Yeah,
I have two
ahead.
Reactions. One is that Duncan Hunter I consider a lost cause, but there are many Republicans who clearly have tired of the war and they're looking for a way out of their lockstep support of the Bush administration. I believe that it's going to take about a dozen Republican senators to really bring this war to an end. So your strategy is not off base. However, I still feel that those who have been trying to get this message to Congressman Thompson are correct, and that we need to pressure safe Democratic incumbents to move more aggressively to challenge the administration. And that, you know, what we're seeing here is an incremental process where the Bush administration is buying time and the Democrats are selling it to him. And they're selling it with restrictions and caveats, and I can appreciate that. There's a certain amount of progress there. But we're still losing 5 to 8 American soldiers a day.
Yeah.
50 to 150 Iraqis are dying every day.
Yeah.
And it's very clear that we are a central part of the problem. And as long as American forces are occupying Iraq, the carnage will continue. And so we're desperate, and we're struggling to find ways to get our leaders to show true leadership, not followship.
Yeah.
And say, you know, I realize this is difficult, and that, you know, there are many Americans who don't want to admit that we've lost this struggle in Iraq. But we've got to face facts. We must confront reality. And we can't do that by throwing $100 billion and another 18 months into this lost cause. And so that's where people are coming from. And when I interviewed Mike Thompson, my big disappointments were he just blew me off when I talked about Iran and the, you know, intent that the U.S. Administration has toward them. And also that he was not familiar with the terms of Barbara Lee's bill. So here he is promoting his. It's similar to Barack Obama's. And it ain't bad, but, you know, we're looking for something that will really produce the desired result at the earliest possible date. And that's why people are putting pressure on Mike Thompson, and I think it's appropriate.
Well, yeah, it is. It is kind of amazing, although I still support Thompson. I still understand exactly where you're coming from.
Right. Tim, I got to go to a break.
Okay.
Thanks for your call today.
You.
I enjoyed your jokes. 888-5-PETER-B, toll free, 888-573-8372.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
Join broadcast journalist Glenn Brooks and native healer Cloud Pyler for an hour of Native Health Radio and discover how sacred medicine can save modern life. Honest, direct, funny, informative, it's programming that makes you think. Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie. I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave. A shrinking glacier. I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech in a free speech zone. You have the right to an attorney. You have the right to a speedy trial. Well, not if you're in Guantanamo. You have the right to privacy. No, wait. No, the FBI can read your mail and listen to your phone calls. America, where are your rights? Join Billy Sunshine, then we'll find them for you.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM, Sundays 3 to 5.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines are open if you'd like to join us in the free speech zone. You can comment on any subject from any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. Call in toll free. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. You can also email me, humblehost@peterbcollins.com. Joining us now is California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi. John, thanks for calling in today.
Always a pleasure to be with such a humble person.
Well, I do
you, Peter.
I do my best. Hey, did you hear the good news, John?
What's that?
We've both been cleared.
Really?
Yes. Neither you nor I nor Zsa Zsa's aging husband are the father of Anna Nicole's baby.
Well, you know, I didn't know that you were involved, and I knew I wasn't involved, but wow. So who is the father?
Larry Burkhead, according to a DNA test that was released from the Bahamas today.
Well, I cannot tell you how uninvolved I have been in this whole thing.
Well, me either. I'm just glad that we can say it's behind us. Well,
exactly.
I wanted to ask you about your vote yesterday at the State Lands Commission. This is one of the many boards or commissions that you serve on is in your role as Lieutenant Governor. And you and John Chang, Chung, I guess he says his name, the state controller, voted against approval of an environmental impact report, which would have permitted BHP Billiton to move forward with its plan to build a liquid natural gas terminal off the coast of Oxnard in Ventura County. First of all, tell us a little bit about the process here. From what we know, Billiton has filed applications to build an LNG terminal at multiple locations from Coos Bay, Oregon, down through the California coastline, and they seem to be looking for the soft spot where somebody's going to let them build it.
Well, that's almost the case. They actually chose a spot in off the coast of Malibu, and they, you know, put forth a proposal. And when it came before us, we just couldn't find the the environmental impact report. In my view, was so badly done that we just couldn't possibly certify the environmental impact report. There was really no good information as to whether we needed the natural gas. They used very old, dated information. And then they refused to look at alternatives, not only alternative sites for the LNG facility, but alternatives like conservation, solar, wind, biomass, other alternatives that are very much a part of the California public policy as it exists today. So, you know, we just simply said, no, the environmental impact report doesn't pass muster. We're not going to approve it. And furthermore, the lease that they needed to build the facility and the pipeline, we refused to grant the lease because we were unwilling to certify the overriding concerns of the state. We just didn't see those overriding concerns for this project. So that's it. This project, we don't believe, is going to go forward. There's still some talk that Schwarzenegger may approve it, but I still don't know how they can build it without a lease, so I think it's pretty much dead.
Now, can the governor overrule the State Lands Commission on this?
Well, yes, in some respects he can, but he cannot grant the lease. The lease is the jurisdiction of the State Lands Commission. It's not the governor. It's the responsibility of the state lands to protect the public trust. You see, that that beach out there and that ocean bed, the floor of the ocean, is owned by you and I and all California citizens. So only the state lands can grant the lease. So without a lease, I don't think this project's going anywhere.
Now, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, there's a state coastal commission meeting on Thursday to okay or deny the project. Is that separate from the lease and your review of the environmental impact report?
Yes, it is. And again, it's highly questionable whether they can do anything without an environmental impact report.
Mm-hmm.
They will not have an environmental document before them to review, and there are a lot of lawyers that say without that environmental impact report, neither the governor nor the state, the Coastal Commission, can take the project up.
Now, John Garamendi, under what circumstances could you imagine that you might vote to approve the siting of an LNG terminal on the coast or off the coast of California?
Well, I would go back to what we did in 1978 when I was in the state Senate. We had an LNG issue before us. It was highly controversial. We told the state Coastal Commission, go out, find the best site for an LNG facility. They did. They came back, and the business community, the gas community at the time, decided that they didn't want to go forward. So nothing happened. Eventually, that law was repealed. And then we got the situation we have today, which is individual companies coming forward one at a time with their own proposals, rather than taking a look at the total state or the total Pacific coast and saying, where's the best facility? Where's the best location? What's the best technology? What I'd recommend is Senator Simidian's bill, which actually provides us with an opportunity to find the best site on the coast with the best technology. I'd put it out to bid then.
Mm-hmm.
Say, okay, here's where we're going to locate it. Anybody that's interested in building it, bid for it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what you're going to do for the state, how you're going to improve the situation for the state of California. You win the bid, you build the site. So the short answer is yes, under the appropriate circumstances, need being proven, safety being proven, and the technology.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think are the most significant security or safety concerns related to the locating of any kind of an LNG terminal? From what I know, the safety record is pretty good on these facilities. Yet, because the actual terminal is offshore, certainly weather and high waves could cause accidents that could lead to a huge fire or a huge explosion. There also is the potential risk of an offshore facility being targeted by enemies or terrorists.
Well, certainly all of those risks are there. They can be engineered to deal with certainly the physical risks. The terrorist risks do exist. To the extent that you're far offshore, the terrorist risk is significantly reduced. It's just going to be there'll be a heck of a fireball out there, and it'll be loud and it'll be bright. Kind of like, what do they call it, the shock and awe?
Yeah.
But it's out there, and it's not going to have a great significant effect, depending on how close you are to the shore. Those issues can be dealt with, in my view, and so an offshore facility seems to make, at least to me, a lot of sense. But the way in which this particular facility was constructed, we just had some real serious problems about, A, the need, and whether it was the best location, as well as the best technology.
So do you think in 5 or 10 years we will have at least one LNG terminal servicing the West Coast?
Well, we already do. In Mexico, on just Ensenada, 70 miles south of the California border, Sempra Energy Company, together with Shell, is building and nearing the completion of an LNG facility that will, in fact, serve California.
Mm-hmm.
It was debatable last night how much of that gas will come to California, but surely some of it will. It's a billion cubic feet per day facility, which is a very substantial amount of the California supply, I think around 15 or maybe up as much as 20% of the total California supply. So there is one already. The old information dating back to 2005 from California Energy Commission is that you would need to have one more facility on the West Coast. Well, one has been built, and that was an issue last night, is that the environmental impact report simply refused to deal with that plant that is in existence.
Mm-hmm.
and nearly complete.
We're talking with John Garamendi. He's California's Lieutenant Governor right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. John, next I want to ask you, you travel the state, you know a lot of people. Have you ever met John Hutson, H-U-T-S-O-N? He's the CEO of the new project. They're trying to build a nuclear power plant in Fresno.
Yeah, I heard about that. No, I don't know him, but I've heard about that, and I'm going, huh?
Yeah.
What are they thinking?
Well, I spent 45 minutes with him at the beginning of today's show. He's an interesting man. He's a good salesman. He's well aware of the objections to nuclear power and his project in particular. And let me just tick off for you the way he responded. I raised three key issues. One, cost overruns. I believe that the cost overruns at Diablo Canyon are what led ultimately to the blackouts of 2001 and the demise of Gray Davis as our governor. And I asked him about that, and he said that this is not a public utility. This is a private company that will build and operate this plant. And he said we would have no way of trying to jam any cost overruns onto ratepayers. It would have to be borne by our shareholders. I thought that was an interesting shift from what happened in the past. I talked to him about the nuclear waste issue, and he said their plan is to ship it to the recycling facility that the French government has built that recycles like 96% of their spent fuel in France. And he acknowledged that it could produce plutonium, and there's a way to reprocess the plutonium into the fuel rods that go to nuclear power plants and prevent it from becoming available to people who might want to build a nuclear weapon. And then I said, well, my other issue is regulation. In France, the government owns and operates the nuclear facilities, and they have a much higher standard of infrastructure management in France than we do here in the United States. In fact, I pointed out that the coal-fired power plant industry has been put on volunteer status by the Bush administration. They can write their own regulations about how much carbon they emit from their smokestacks, and I don't think that that's a good example for the nuclear power industry if they hope to spawn a new generation of these plants.
Well, those are interesting responses. We'd have to see exactly what he has in mind. The nuclear industry is somewhat revived because of an $8 billion a teaser that the federal government put into the last energy bill. They offered $8 billion for people that wanted to put together a nuclear power plant, one more subsidy. I'm really curious about the way in which they want to handle waste. If that was, in fact, viable, every nuclear facility that exists today would be preparing to ship their nuclear waste off to France, but they're not. So I'm really curious about whether that's actually viable at all. The second part of it is that I'd be very interested in the design that he is selecting. Many of these power plants use water to cool the plant, and they are a major consumer of water.
Right. His answer.
There's precious little water in the Fresno area, and there's already a huge fight brewing in that area. So if he wants to use water to cool this plant, he's going to come up with some different design because there's.
His answer.
I can't imagine it's 13 to 20,000 acre feet of water.
Right, John. His answer on that was that he has a plan to use gray water waste. From the, partly treated sewage out of the Fresno sewage treatment plant.
Well, that water is not just partly treated, it's fully treated and discharged into the streams and rivers in that area and is used, frankly, it's used for part of the environmental restoration in the area. So, once again, the water issue is a profoundly important issue in California. These things do consume an enormous amount of water.
Yeah, yeah. Well, watch this one.
But there's one more thing here, Peter, and that is that he's missing the real opportunity that exists in California agriculture, and that's biofuels of all kinds. There's an enormous potential in California for the creation and the utilization of biofuels, and why somebody would want to go off and build an extraordinarily expensive power plant that has all kinds of issues, not the least of which you've got to change the laws, when you have all of these biofuel options right smack there and giving agriculture an enormous new opportunity for business.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as I say, I think he's a very good salesman, so watch out. John Hudson is probably going to be calling on you. He needs a waiver from the state of the moratorium on
exactly.
nuclear power plant construction, and I know that won't come easily. He talked about using the referendum process to do that. So I think they got a pile of money there, and they plan to try to drive this through. So I hope you'll keep an eagle eye on that for us.
Well, I certainly will.
All right. John Garamendi, thanks for joining us today.
Always a pleasure, Peter. You take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We'll talk again soon. California's Lieutenant Governor John Garamendi talking about his vote to block the LNG terminal off of Ventura, Oxnard, and also about this plan to build a nuclear power plant near Fresno. I've got room for your call in the next segment, so call me and we'll chat here in the Free Speech Zone. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
People are talking about the show. Weekday mornings 9 to 10 on KRXA 540. Does it really suck less?
You guys are, in many ways, so self-referential that it doesn't let a guy like me feel like he can be part of the conversation.
We try not to be too self-referential, and we'll try to catch ourselves. I appreciate your call.
I wish I knew what that meant.
I wish I knew what that meant. Okay. But you're sucking less than you used to.
Down in Monterey.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Hey, everybody, let's take a look at the latest traffic and tell you what's happening. Let's go over to northbound 17. That's out of Campbell. We do have a, just northbound 17 after Camden. We have vehicles apparently swerving to avoid a bumper that fell off a car. It's in the middle lane, so watch out if you're traveling in that particular area. All righty, San Martin, Foothill Avenue at East San Martin. We have a structure fire. The fire department is actually en route to the scene there, so don't know how badly this is affecting traffic at this point. In Rio Del Mar Seascape Resort at Sumner Avenue, we have a crash there. In fact, the sheriff's department is on the scene. That's really the only details at this point. Other than that, we have no major stalls or accidents to report. This report brought to you by the Toyota Prius. Toyota Prius with an APA estimated 60 miles per gallon in the city. Visit your local Toyota dealer and find out why the Prius is the car more people say they would buy again. Prius!
We're in the home stretch here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Your calls are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B.
As I was walking, ribbon up highway, I saw above me and in the skyway. I saw below me a golden valley. Yeah, this land was made for you and me.
This program is produced in San Francisco by the incredible Katrina Rill. Brian Urban is our assistant producer taking your calls this afternoon. And that toll-free number again is 888-573-8372. And Brian just passed this story along to me. ABC News broadcast this evening on the World News Tonight that the Pentagon has decided, well, let me put it this way. There is a proposal on Defense Secretary Gates' desk to extend the tour of duty of every active duty soldier in Iraq by 3 months. Yeah, the surge is going to continue. Separately, General Petraeus argued today that he needs to hold on to the surge forces, some 40,000 to 50,000 additional troops, not the 22,000 that Bush talked about in January. He needs to hold on to those until at least this fall. And this just underscores what we were talking about earlier this hour. I appreciate that Nancy Pelosi and Mike Thompson and other Democrats have moved the party into a better position than we were in a year ago. But to give Bush $100 billion and another 12 to 18 months of this war that we have lost, that cannot be salvaged by putting more Americans at risk and killing more Iraqis. Later this week, Juan Cole will be on with us, a professor from the University of Michigan. And he has a piece that you can read at thenation.com. arguing that we need to withdraw and we need to force a political settlement at the same time. And he believes the Sunnis won't come to the table until they know we are on our way out the door. And even if that's not correct, we can't predict exactly what will happen. We know that we're going to leave Iraq eventually. And to pretend that, you know, the surge is working, to pretend that another few months is going to make a significant difference, I'm sorry. It's just not true. And that's what they are trying to make us believe. There was a bizarre exchange between Dana Perino, who is subbing for Tony Snow as White House press secretary, and reporters today when she tried to argue that the surge is working. Well, don't be fooled. A lot of Iraqis are playing games, including the forces of Muqtada al-Sadr. And they're just waiting for us to go. Sean in Carmel Valley, thanks for your call. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Peter, I have a philosophical question. It's not a very nice one, but I'll bet I'm not the only one battling with it. I'm having a harder and harder time keeping what little optimism I usually have anyway. I mean, the news is just weighing me down to the point where I thought I'd ask anyone that was willing to take the question, mm-hmm. and you're the one that came to mind this afternoon. How does one maintain optimism when the evidence is indicating that it's illusionary? Now, I know you need to maintain optimism just to make get through the day, but how do you really do it?
I'm not sure. I have my own little reservoir of optimism, and I can't quite source it. You know, I approach life on a daily basis that things are difficult, but human beings can make them more difficult by the attitude that they bring to the challenges they face. And so I guess I have, for me anyway, a combination that works and that isn't lethal of hope and cynicism that keep my expectations low enough that my hope can help me get over the barrier on a daily basis. And I'm glad you asked about it, John, but I don't know beyond that how to describe it.
I read a book years ago by Bertrand Russell, who was a very Renaissance-type man, one of the real Renaissance men, and he wrote a book called The Conquest of Happiness in the 30s. And he essentially said that the only way one can be happy, and I would say optimistic as well, is by willing it. He said, if you try to maintain happiness based on circumstance or knowledge, because the better informed you are about the news, I mean, that old statement that's in the Book of Solomon about knowledge bringing much travail or sadness, I think is essentially true. The more knowledgeable you get is not likely to promote happiness, because you see what a frayed at the ends and worse than that this world is, and the human being the most problematic of everything.
Well, maybe one way to do it is to turn to young people, and I'll just give you a quick example. Yesterday, my nephew came over, and he's a big sports fan, and I had the news on. I was watching the news hour on public television, and the A's had a home game, and I said, "Hey, Evan, do you want to watch the A's game?" And he said, "Well, I'm not sure it's on, but I want to finish watching this news story about immigration first." And it made my day, because Evan has not evidenced a whole lot of interest in politics or the world around him. And he's always been, you know, the first guy to tell me who won or who lost in a professional sport. And, you know, it said, wow, to me, here's a kid who wants to know more about what's really going on. And as the story continued, he started to offer his own opinions about the immigration debate, and he talked back to Bush's comments, and it made me feel good that here's a young man who could check out and just be concerned about American Idol and sharing tunes with people from his iPod, and he actually sat there and said, "No, I want to watch this story about the immigration debate." So, John, thanks for your call, and we'll keep working on the optimism thing, okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
That's it for the Peter B. Collins Show today. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
I don't know how anyone could have heard this and not been personally hurt and offended.
Rutgers women's basketball coach Vivian Stringer took the lead in blasting radio host Don Imus for his crude comment about the team. CBS News correspondent Bianca Solorzano was there.
They have some very strong words. One of the team's players said that she has a lot that she would not say here today, but she has a lot that she plans to say to Don Imus.
And the players will get that chance. This is forward Essence Carson.
We have agreed to have a meeting with Mr. Don Imus. This meeting will be a private meeting at an undisclosed location in the near future.
Imus says he doesn't expect to be forgiven, but he needs to stand before the women and say he's sorry. A resolution of the Duke lacrosse case could come as early as tomorrow. That's according to reports in Raleigh, North Carolina, where the state attorney general's office has been conducting an investigation since local prosecutor Mike Nifong recused himself under fire. At that point, he'd already dropped the rape charges against three Duke University lacrosse players after the stripper who performed at a team party last year changed her story. President Bush is inviting congressional leaders to the White House next week. He told the American Legion today he wants to work out an Iraq war funding bill.
A bill that funds our troops without artificial timetables or withdrawal and without handcuffing our generals on the ground.
Democratic leaders are cool to the idea of a meeting. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the administration has to negotiate without preconditions.
They want a blank check for a war. They've walked away from their own benchmarks. They're now rejecting their own benchmarks. We embrace their benchmarks, put them in the bill. They're now walking away from it.
The president has said he'll veto any bill with a deadline. As the Senate takes up a new proposal to fund embryonic stem cell research, doctors report promising results with an experimental procedure involving tinkering with adult stem cells to reverse the effects of type 1 diabetes. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has more.
The researchers don't know why this approach works or whether it indeed will someday lead to a cure for type 1 diabetes. And the designer of the study, Dr. Richard Burt of Northwestern, cautions this treatment might only be acceptable for newly diagnosed patients.